number of people filing new unemployment claims in the country is at the lowest point since the start of the pandemic in March of 2020. This all may sound like good news, but the real story is more complicated than what those headline numbers say. The economy feels different depending on who you are, where you live, and what kind of work you do. Nevada currently has the highest unemployment rate in the country. A recent report from the AARP found 41% of women workers experienced some type of job interruption during the pandemic. But at the same time, some small business owners, especially those in the restaurant industry, say they've been desperately trying to find workers and they just can't find enough staff. Here to help us make sense of the mixed messages we are seeing in the job market are three women who've been on different sides of this story. Alisa Cafferata is the director of Nevada's Department of Employment, Training, and Rehabilitation. Mansi Miekel is a home health aide and mother of three in New York City. And Isabel Torres runs a couple of restaurants called Little Sesame in Washington, D.C. Thank you all very much for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for having us.
So, Director Cafferata, I want to begin the conversation with you. Your state's unemployment rate has been somewhat stubbornly high. As of September, it was at 7.5%. I know the state did add more than 4,000 jobs last month, but I imagine that it's been challenging for you all to fully revert to what the economy looked like before the pandemic.
At the beginning of the pandemic, we saw unemployment of about 30%. So 7.5% is a pretty strong and quick recovery. And we do know there are about 50,000 jobs that just are not going to come back. And I think that's a lot of the story is that really the workforce and the way people are engaged in work is going to be changing.
Can you explain that when you say that there are some 50,000 jobs that you all don't expect will come back? What kind of jobs are those?
Largely, that is hospitality jobs in Las Vegas. So if you look at the unemployment rate in Nevada as a whole, both rural Nevada and northern Nevada have pretty much recovered back to pre-pandemic employment levels. But it's Las Vegas and those jobs in the casinos and some of the supporting industries that are not coming back.
So Isabel, I want to turn to you. You run a couple of restaurants here in Washington, D.C. My understanding is it has been difficult for you all to find workers. And given what we just heard from Alisa in Nevada, I'm curious what the dynamic has been like for you.
I feel personally that a lot of hospitality workers don't feel that hospitality is secure, given that during the pandemic, restaurants were the ones that fell the hardest. And there are still so many restaurants that haven't reopened. So people are going to security. So in our company, in Little Sesame, we try to provide security. You know, we post it when we can, we talk about it, but it's still not enough of a draw.
And when you talk about that job security, is that the sense that people want a salary, that they want a job with benefits? You know, is it that they want higher wages?
I think it's a little bit of everything. They want to make sure that if a child is sick, they can stay home. They want to make sure that if a family member is sick, if they get sick, that, you know, they'll have paid sick leave, because in the hospitality industry, that doesn't exist, right? Mm-hmm. So people want to know that if they're sick and they have to miss 2 weeks of work, that they're compensated in a way, you know, and we as a business try to do that.
Mm-hmm. Mansi, I want to turn to you. I understand that you were working, but you left your job last February to take care of your three children and that you are living in a shelter right now. Can you talk to us about what happened?
I am a home health aide, so like I would choose my hours based on my availability, and my availability is based on when I have someone to watch my kids, right? That's how it goes. And it started because we had moved. Like you said, you stated, you know, we were in a shelter, so, you know, we move around a lot. So they were in a childcare in Brooklyn, so I'm like, okay, this should be easy. You know, I just need to switch their childcare, just go in and say, hey, you know, I want them over here, but 10 months later, and I still don't have childcare. That's how wrong I was about how easy this was going to be.
So Mansi, I was going to say there was an expectation that perhaps the job market might turn around a bit come the fall, in part because schools were going to reopen. Are your older children now back in school, and has that changed the dynamic for you?
My older kids are in school, but I still have a 3-year-old. right?
Yes. Yeah.
And she still needs to go to school, and she can't go to pre-K because they don't have space available in the schools that are close by. So this is where we're stuck in this cycle with the system of working, getting childcare, not work. You can't work unless you have childcare. You can't get childcare unless you're working. It's this cycle of, it's crazy that I don't even like to say it's a choice, but it's crazy how parents have to choose between working and their children. You don't have to ask me if I'm going to come to work, because I'm not coming, okay? I'm staying with my children.
Isabel and Alisa, I see you both nodding in agreement. It must be that you guys have been having these childcare conversations, or at least you guys are aware of the dynamic that Mansi is talking about.
This is Alisa. I know we are providing subsidy for fewer than 10% of the eligible families, and our state is bad, but it's not too far off from a lot of other states. So this truly is an issue around the country. The other thing I wanted to share is, you know, for people who are a little more gray hairs like I have, when my kids left daycare, the money that was freed up was enough to make a car payment. Like, that was a manageable amount of money. Just with one child in childcare right now, you're looking at what's equivalent to a mortgage.
You know, I cover my day job. I'm a White House correspondent. I cover politics. And there's been a lot of focus from Democrats on the American Rescue Plan, which offered, you know, families assistance. There were also expanded unemployment benefits. Were these federal programs helpful either to you at the state level, Alisa, or individually even to you, or as a small business owner? Were any of these federal programs economically beneficial to you all?
For us, no, because there was still childcare in Washington, D.C. is like tuition for a college student. And there's so few daycares that reopened and had spots for kids that a lot of our workers, it just didn't make sense for them to put their kids back into daycare that was above $2,000, you know? So it's a monthly thing and you want the best for your kids, but sometimes you just can't make that happen.
What about you, Mansi? Are you at that point? I mean, are you still applying for jobs? Are you still putting in applications? Or
I literally went to the office last week to put the thing in to try to get childcare again. They denied me again because they said that the supervisor who signed the paper signed in the wrong spot. Like, literally, I would make $400 after they take out their taxes, and I literally make $400 a week, right? $400. With that $400, the HRA then decides that that is way too much money. So then they cut everything else. They cut your food stamps. They cut your cash assistance. They cut everything down. So you're literally living off that $400 that you're making. I have three kids. A Metro card a week is $33. Okay. That doesn't include Pampers for my daughter. Doesn't include wipes. And we're just talking about in general. Just in general.
So I'm curious, Alisa, as you hear all of this, because you must be hearing similar stories, I guess, from other women in the hospitality sector in and around Vegas. I mean, what is the solution and what will it take for the economy, let's say in Nevada, but even more broadly, if you have thoughts to go back to normal? Is that possible?
We as a country have not ever invested in, you know, some of the things we've been talking about here, childcare, paternity leave, sick leave. We have individual employers that do it, but we don't as a country require these things that pretty much every other industrialized country does require. There has been a lot of innovation and new technology and entrepreneurship in the state, which is great for the people that come participate in those jobs and those industries. And those are the solutions we're looking at, trying to figure out how do we make this available to the people that have these barriers like childcare that are not going to be quick to solve. Getting new people trained as childcare providers and getting childcare centers opened is going to be a long haul proposition. So we need to figure out how to go to where Mansi is and train her while she's watching her kids, because she shouldn't miss out. And I think there's such an urgent need to see changes that I'm hopeful that we will see a lot of the changes we've been talking about for many years.
That was Director of Nevada's Department of Employment, Training, and Rehabilitation, Elisa Cafferata. Also joining us was Mansi Nicol, a home health aide and mother of three in New York City, and Isabel Torres, who runs a couple of restaurants called Little Sesame in Washington, D.C. Thank you all for taking the time. Appreciate it.
In Detroit, 400 workers at the Henry Ford Health System quit their jobs because of a vaccine mandate. North Carolina-based Novant Health fired 175 employees. Almost 1,900 workers in Washington State are out, including a head college football coach. Workers who refuse to get vaccinated represent only a tiny fraction of overall employees across the country. Still, NPR's Andrea Hsu talked with a few of them to understand why not getting the vaccine is worth losing their jobs.
For 33 years, Carl Bonack had his dream job.
When's this evening? Well, they have a north component or slightly north.
Bonack was chief meteorologist at TV6 on Michigan's Upper Peninsula, a self-described weather nut who lives for snowstorms. His steady forecasts led to a promotional campaign at his station in the 1990s.
That's what Carl says.
And it's stuck ever since. Someone even wrote a song about him.
That's what Carl said.
Then this year came the biggest storm of his career. Gray Television, which owns his station and many more across the country, announced that all of its employees must be fully vaccinated. Managers by mid-September, and 2 weeks after that for everyone else. Bonack knew right away he'd be out by the end of the month.
I just did not want to take the shot. I felt it was my right as a human being and a citizen of the United States to decide what I put in my body.
Never mind that the science shows vaccines protect not just you, but those around you, and that not being vaccinated could put your colleagues at risk.
This is America, and we have a choice.
Well, on September 14th, he had just finished the 7 p.m. news when his general manager called him urgently. He'd learned that as chief meteorologist, Bonack was considered a manager. His deadline to be vaccinated was the next day, not the end of the month. Bonack went home for dinner, as he always did, and returned for the late night news. He delivered the forecast at 10 and 11.
And that was it. I walked out and I knew that I'd never walk into that building again after 33 years.
Carl Bonack is 68. For him, retirement has come early. But many others who have quit or been fired over vaccine mandates are still in the prime of their careers.
My name's Jennifer Bridges. I've been a registered nurse a little over 8 years now. Most of the time was Houston Methodist until I got fired back in June.
Bridges was one of about 150 people who quit or were fired from the hospital system for refusing the vaccine. They made up less than 1% of employees, but they were loud.
Frontline healthcare workers fighting back in Texas nearly 200.
Bridges became the face of the resistance, and that led to 5 job offers, including 2 at hospitals, all before she was actually fired.
People were offering me jobs back in May.
She's now in private nursing, tending to one patient full time. For other Houston Methodist workers, getting fired has had graver consequences. Becky Melser worked as a scheduler, setting up diagnostic procedures, sometimes surgeries. It was a career she was proud of. She'd planned to retire from the hospital. Instead, she too was fired in June.
2 weeks shy of 15 years.
She applied for unemployment but was denied, told she was not eligible since she'd been fired for misconduct. She's appealing the decision. Meantime, looking for a new job has been tough. She tried other hospitals, but at every turn, she encountered vaccine mandates.
Started interviewing in one, and then they were going to start requiring it and put my application at another hospital, and then they started requiring it.
Now she's trying for customer service jobs outside of healthcare, and she's getting a start in real estate. The thing about Melser, she was not originally against the COVID vaccine. She'd actually made an appointment to get it back in January. But twice, her first shot was delayed for reasons beyond her control. Then she says God came to her in a dream.
He kept telling me, don't take it, don't take it. And I said, really? And I kept questioning, and he kept coming back with, yeah, don't take it.
Despite the strong evidence that vaccines work, her mind is made up. She will never take the vaccine. And so at 59 years old, her job search continues. Andrea Hsu, NPR News.
On Thursday, cinematographer Helena Hutchins tragically lost her life when a gun misfired on the set of an upcoming film called Rust. The accident and the events leading up to it have sparked widespread discussion about what proper safety measures ought to look like in the movie industry. Dan Leonard is an associate dean and professor at Chapman University's Dodge College of Film and Media Arts. He's also worked on several film sets during his career, and he joins us now from Orange, California. Dan, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. Happy to join today.
What's the dynamic been in terms of handling weapons on the sets that you've been on?
Well, I've actually AD'd a few low-budget films, and I've always had positive confirmation that a gun is empty before being brought to set. I never allow live rounds to be on set. There's no reason for actual bullets to be on set. And whenever possible, you know, we look at every shot, storyboard it, we adjust the angle so that there's never a human in the line of fire, and even still put sort of barriers and common sense precautions in place.
Maybe this is a bit of a naive question, Dan, but I don't entirely understand why real weapons are still used on sets. I mean, I guess I envision that there's so much of an advanced capability now with sound effects, visual effects.
Yeah, it can be done in post-production. You can add the flashes and the sounds.
Okay.
Many filmmakers are trying to strive for realism, and oftentimes there's sort of a mixed approach employed. So, you know, particularly if something was being pointed at the camera, you could use a prop gun and do a flash, or if there's some sort of human in the way. If there's no one in the frame and you're shooting where there's nobody, that would be a safer sort of thing. And sometimes those approaches are mixed.
Got it. But the standard is to essentially continue to use real weapons. That's what most film crews do?
Well, it's an individual choice. There are many now that don't use real weapons, that do it all in post. And then there are filmmakers that want the sort of realism and the reaction of the live. And, you know, with the proper protocols, that can be safe. But very difficult in independent filmmaking because it's really hard to get a strict standard of safety.
You know, the Los Angeles Times reported that several members of the union representing entertainment crews, which Hutchins herself was a member of, had walked off of this set earlier in the day. They were replaced, we were told, by non-union members. And I am curious to understand how disruptive that change may have been to safety procedures.
That's very disruptive. Whenever you have new personnel on set, and particularly if, as I understand, there wasn't a safety meeting done at the beginning of the day, not all of the communication that would have happened in pre-production may have been flowed to everybody on set. Mm-hmm. But in the case of gun safety, it should be really only two people should ever touch the weapon. One is the weapons handler, and the other is the actor. And each should double check that it's empty.
This accident is not entirely the first of its kind, so I'm wanting to understand how it can be prevented moving forward.
I think there needs to be stricter guidelines. Right now, it's sort of left up to the industry to police. The big studios have the budgets and use qualified personnel. Mm-hmm. But particularly in independent filmmaking, they're trying to make things in the least expensive way as possible. And oftentimes, not all the procedures that are put in place for safety have been followed.
Well, that's Dan Leonard of Chapman University's Dodge College of Film and Media Arts. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much for having me.
Last night, the rideshare company Lyft released its long-awaited and first-ever safety report. It fielded 4,000 complaints about sexual assault between 2017 and 2019. And this is the moment I want to pause and let you know that this discussion will go into some graphic details. Now, the vast majority of those who reported assaults were women. One who did not want to be identified spoke to NPR in late 2019 and said a driver had raped her months before.
For some of it, I was probably unconscious in the car. But the parts that I remember, I was, you know, trying to bargain with the attacker to please take me back to where I was originally supposed to go.
That woman was represented in a lawsuit against Lyft by a team of attorneys. Rachel Abrams is one of them. Welcome to the program.
Yes, thank you. Pleasure to be here.
Now, this report talked about other kinds of safety incidents, but I want to talk about what Lyft has revealed in this report regarding sexual assault. What are the numbers that we're seeing? Does any of it surprise you?
No, it doesn't surprise us. We've been waiting for the safety report for quite some time. Lyft had stated that they were going to release it years ago. We've been waiting, and it's interesting, not quite sure why they waited so long to reveal it. And also, it only goes through, as you pointed out, 2019. What about the last 2 years? Because nothing has changed since that interview with my client, Jane Doe, since late 2019.
I wanted to ask you about that because in 2019, Lyft said that it would implement changes, including driver education, but more importantly, a notification system to use if riders feel unsafe. Has that yielded a difference?
The majority of my clients, their phones may have been out of battery. Someone may have called the ride for them, so their phone doesn't mean you don't have the safety feature because you're not showing it on a ride. Some of them may be too intoxicated to be able to utilize the phone in that feature. So there's a vast array of reasons why some of those safety features are really of no consequence in preventing these serious attacks. And what we've been saying all along is video or audio surveillance that is mandatory in these cars would prevent, the vast majority of these attacks, in our opinion.
What is the state of your lawsuit at this point?
We are in litigation with Lyft and have been for quite some time. There are hundreds of cases filed currently. They're all coordinated here in San Francisco. We are in discovery phase right now with trials set for May of next year.
Lyft has said repeatedly that these safety issues account for a fraction of a point of all the rides in that 2 year period, right, in this report. They say even one is too many, but what's your response to that?
I think, like you said, even one is too many. And I agree, Lyft does millions of rides across the US, but our firm alone represents over 1,000 women that have been sexually assaulted. That number to me in and of itself is astronomically high and too many, regardless of the number of rides, if those could be prevented.
You started to talk about this a little, and I want to hear more about what you think can be done differently. What kinds of changes are you or your clients calling for or believe could change this?
Well, I alluded to the primary one, which we've been saying for quite some time, which is video surveillance. It would protect the drivers as well. But if there's mandatory video surveillance, we believe 90%+ of these attacks would be prevented because they would be on video. They would be unable to commit the crimes that they commit. So that would be the main one. Of course, even more driver education. It's very easy to become a driver for a rideshare company. You click on the app and, upload insurance and you're done. You work at most places, they'll give you some sort of a 10-15 question interview to see and assess your psychological background and status. But even as 5-10 minute Zoom interview would probably weed out a lot of potential problem drivers.
Rachel Abrams, one of the attorneys representing victims of sexual assault in lawsuits against Lyft and Uber. Thank you so much for your time.
Oh, of course. Thank you so much for doing the story.
It has long been a given that a 4-year college degree is a prerequisite for moving up the economic ladder. But for some, that requirement is having unintended consequences. Paul Solman has the story for our series on Rethinking College.
So I type in, yep. C-O-N-S-T, space, port.
In Durham, North Carolina, software engineer Tony Bird is so sure of his skills, he was game to try to teach me how to code.
Space 3000.
Semicolon. And the spaces and the format is very particular.
I love understanding systems. And that's
white hat hacker Oscar Anaya, who grew up dirt poor in a Texas border town, is pretty confident himself.
Because I've always been good at computer hacking.
In Cumberland, Maryland, the heart of Appalachian coal country,
my high school mascot was a coal miner.
Cybersecurity engineer John Hartman isn't bashful either.
There was no better candidate than me for that job.
But Hartman didn't have a college degree. Neither did Anaya or Bird. And that alone kept them out of good jobs for years. Bird, quarterback of his high school football team, let his chance for an athletic scholarship simply slip away.
I just kept procrastinating and pushing it off and didn't put in the application form like I should have.
Instead, he wound up working as a barista for 7 years. His current colleague, Mariana Perez, also now a software engineer, toiled as a manicurist for 9 years as she struggled to pay for community college.
I had to stop work, make sure I had the money, and then continue because I didn't want to have loans.
In John Hartman's second year of community college,
my car just broke down. I had an 88 Ford Bronco. The transmission went out on me twice. I can't afford to go to college. I need to go get a job.
At a local factory, building cabinets, followed by a stint as a freight train conductor, then shift work at a paper mill.
One of the most dangerous industries that there is, chemicals, moving machinery, that anybody could get swept into and hurt.
Oscar Anaya also dropped out of community college and took high-risk work on an oil rig.
In the sun, with chemicals and helicopters and things like that, I was breathing in a lot of small, fine particles of granite. So it completely destroyed my nostrils and my sinuses. So I had to leave that job. I was like, you know what? I'm good with computers. I should try doing something with computers. So I applied and I applied and I applied. No one was picking me up.
Why was no one picking you up?
Something's happening that is just not letting me through. And the only criteria that I could think of is education. And I honestly started falling into a very nihilistic way of seeing the world, and where I was like, you know what, this is just how it's going to be. I'm probably never going to make as much as my friends are making because I just didn't finish college.
You mean you had good reason to believe you were being rejected because you didn't have a college degree.
Mm-hmm.
That then made you feel inadequate because you didn't have a college degree?
It contributed to my downward spiral emotionally, yes.
Anaya is far from alone, says economist Byron Auguste.
Over the last 40 years, we've come to a place where the vast majority of middle-class jobs require a bachelor's degree to be considered.
Sometimes to the point of absurdity.
Even though two-thirds of administrative assistants don't have bachelor's degrees, three-quarters of the new job postings for administrative assistants say you have to have a bachelor's degree to be considered for that job. So two-thirds of the people who currently do that job can't apply for three-quarters of the new jobs in the field.
But why?
Sometimes a company will require a college degree just because they can.
Hiring expert Nick Korkadilos, who runs the Ask the Headhunter website, says the degree hurdle emerged as help wanted ads moved online and the number of applicants per job exploded.
Sometimes a company will get 10,000 applicants for one job. How do they winnow them out? One of the easiest ways is just to require a college degree.
Well, this is obviously discriminatory against people who don't have a college degree, right?
Well, but you can't accuse a company of discriminating because they asked for a college degree, can you? You can't process people through a database. You can process their keywords through a database. And a college degree is nothing more than a keyword.
But the net effect is discriminatory. Overall, more than 60% of American workers don't have a four-year degree. But, says Byron Auguste,
when you put a bachelor's degree screen on a job, you exclude almost 70% of African Americans. You exclude almost 80% of Latino workers. And by the way, you exclude almost 70% of rural workers of all races.
And that, says Auguste, has been fueling inequality since 1980. Pushing wages for those with just a high school diploma down 13%, adjusted for inflation, while wages for those with a four-year degree have risen by 13%. For men, the difference in lifetime earnings is now around $1 million.
To say that college can be a bridge to opportunity, well, that's great. But to make college a drawbridge that pulls up, and if you can't cross it, then you have no path to opportunity.
And you wind up in the low-wage moat.
So I did a little bit of valet parking.
I finally got on with UPS as a package handler for the Christmas season.
I went into retail. I sold computers.
I'm tired of being at the mercy of all these other jobs. I want a career.
This simplistic bachelor's degree screen, it's really outlived its usefulness. So employers are leaving so much talent on the table.
Not all employers, however. IBM, for instance, has Earn While You Learn apprenticeship programs, which have trained the four people you've now met. No experience required, though Oscar Anaya, now on IBM's top hacker team, already had plenty of skills.
I've been hacking computers since I was 12 years old.
Because that was the only way he could get a computer.
We were extremely poor, so what could I afford?
An old one for $20, locked. So he had to hack his way in. And fittingly, during his apprenticeship interview,
he was asking me about how to break into things.
Like electronic ankle bracelets.
I told him that a lot of the attacks could be done with a $3 screwdriver and a couple of cables, which is something that your, you know, security tester would not imagine. And yeah, that's how I got accepted into the IBM apprenticeship.
As did Tony Bird, after his 7 years behind the Starbucks counter in the IBM lobby.
When did it occur to you that you could actually work at IBM?
So that's when my friend Dave comes in.
Software engineer Dave Green, who was a regular customer.
It happened one day when he asked me, how do I go upstairs and do what you're doing? I'm like, well, you just gotta learn how to talk to computers. And he asked me, can you teach me how to do that? And I said, what are you doing during lunch?
Green tutored, Bird learned the basics of coding. On his second try, he passed the apprenticeship test and immediately tripled his pay.
Are you sorry you didn't go to college?
Nope, not now.
And so a final question for philosopher and longtime professor Martha Nussbaum.
Do you think every young person in America should go to college?
Yes. Well, everyone who wants to. Going to college has three purposes. One is to prepare you for a job. A second is to prepare you for a life full of richness and meaning. And a third is to prepare you to be a good citizen.
As she argues in her book, Not for Profit, without good citizens, democracy dies. But she adds,
the first thing is everyone should have the opportunity to do it without crushing burden of cost.
That's why IBM's former software apprentices could hardly believe their ears when IBM's Kelly Jordan told them.
We've been partnering with the American Council on Education, and they've actually determined that the Software Development Apprenticeship Program is worth up to 45 college credits, which is the equivalent of 3 semesters of college.
Wow.
Based on the completion
that's,
of the IBM apprenticeship.
Huge.
Putting Tony Bird close to an associate's degree.
Wow, that's great. That's impressive. That's good news.
That's a great news. Thank you.
And Mariana Perez, close to her bachelor's, though she no longer needs one to get a high-paying job. For the PBS NewsHour, Paul Solman.
Pressure is mounting on lawmakers and White House officials who met again today as they scramble to secure a deal on the president's Build Back Better agenda. But key sticking points remain, like how to pay for the massive social spending measure. For the latest on negotiations, I'm joined by our White House correspondent, Yamiche Alcindor. So hello, Yamiche. They are under the gun right now. Tell us what White House and officials and the president are doing to try to reach a deal, and tell us what the latest sticking points are.
Well, President Biden and White House officials are scrambling, Judy, scrambling to try to make a deal, to try to unite the Democratic Party so that the president, when he leaves for Europe tomorrow, can have something to talk about to our European allies. That being said, there are a lot of meetings going on, and the White House has been saying that they're confident that a deal could possibly be reached tonight or by tomorrow. But it's really hard to see that coming together because the details of the bill are still really being worked out. White House officials that I've been talking to in the last hour say that really developments have been changing hour by hour. Now, today, White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki, she said she was confident that a possibility of a deal could still be reached. I pressed her on why she felt confident, given the fact that the details are still being worked out. Here's what she told me.
I think what members of Congress have conveyed to all of you and leaders in Congress, as well as the White House and the president, is that we are very close. That's because we are very close. And it does require working through specific details and components that need to be finalized before we have a final agreement.
Now, the key part of what you said, there are specific details and components. So in the last hour, we learned between myself as well as Lisa Desjardins, our Capitol Hill correspondent, that one big key provision that Democrats wanted in, that progressive Democrats wanted in, is already being seen as likely out of the deal, and that is paid family leave. Now, the president, as well as progressives, had been initially pushing for 12 weeks of family paid leave, which is in some ways mirroring what happens in other countries. That was then whittled down to 4 weeks. And now, within the last hour, White House officials as well as Capitol Hill sources are telling us that that is likely out. And it's out because Senator Joe Manchin does not want it in. And what this is really shaping up to be is really a bill that is mirroring what Joe Manchin wants rather than what progressive Democrats want.
Context of white supremacy. Gus T. Renegade in for another broadcast, hopefully to share constructive information on the system of White Supremacy. Today's date, Friday, October 29, 2021. So I have been told. This is our weekly Neutralizing Workplace Racism broadcast, hopefully offering constructive information, ways to solve problems without creating new problems. Gold standard, always try to be thinking about that. What problem are you trying to solve? Is this going to create new problems? Whatever strategy, technique that I employ. Certainly this is not for spectators. We have folks who have figured out these are some things that work, things to say, things to do to avoid problems and or to immediately neutralize problems. When folks are trying to mistreat you or make things difficult for you, wham, this is how to neutralize that immediately. If you have figured out some techniques, that is always, you should be on speed dial. First person with a hand up, the number to dial, 720-716-7300, the code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Certainly, if you have problems or whatever the issue is, that is certainly always welcome. We will do our best, see if we can provide counter-racist input. Again, trying to solve problems without creating new problems. Let's see. I'll go over some of the clips that we heard at the beginning, and then we'll get to email address untiljustice@gmail.com. untiljustice@gmail.com. If you can be anonymous, we can share your commentary on the program, and you will not have to be identified, either if you have suggestions or if you have, you know, a problem to report. Let's see. From the audio segments, so many things. That's why it's been such a ridiculous, turbulent year on so many fronts. I guess number one, the first thing, the audio for Neutralizing Workplace Racism for last week. So that's October the 22nd. I made an error. It was not the correct audio file, so I had to go back and replace it. I'd said yesterday I was taking mental health days, make sure that I could be feeling great and doing well. And so I was a little behind in seeing some of my emails, but was able to check, corrected it yesterday or earlier in the week. But it should be available. Just go back and check for October 22nd, 2021, Neutralizing Workplace Racism. The correct file should be there for last week's program. That is number one. Much obliged to the folks who emailed to let me know. And where's the content? Trying to, you know, get information if I can. So that's number one. Next, with the Hollywood shooting, even though that wasn't the first audio report that we heard, the shooting on the filming for the movie Rust, Alec Baldwin, which is interesting because we just finished reading Woody Allen's Apropos of Nothing. Alec Baldwin, mentioned in the book, big time supporter of Woody Allen, he, using this gun on the set, ends up killing someone. And they're doing the big investigation and talking about, are there going to be charges and workplace safety? There's that word again, the word for 2021, safety, the concept rather. But when I heard all of that, I immediately thought of the late Melvin Van Peebles. Now we just were talking about Sweet Sweetback yesterday during Shaft and even previously. And there is a documentary on the movie Sweetback, and Melvin Van Peebles and a number of the folks from the cast talk about the film and put the movie in context and the Black Panthers involvement and all of those great details, Earth, Wind, and Fire doing the soundtrack. There is a moment where they talk about, because they had guns that were used in the film, and so they had guns on the set. There's a moment where they talked about how they had, I believe, like a drawer, and I think maybe there were two drawers. So they had segregation. Use a caller in Florida. I've been influenced. So they had a segregated drawer system. So they had one drawer for real, authentic firearms, you know, live guns, real bullets can kill someone. So they had one drawer for those, and they had a separate drawer for the fake movie prop guns. They said that one day on the set, someone, I guess, carelessly threw all the guns in together, right? So people had been reaching in. I guess they went out and did a day of filming. People had been reaching in and grabbing what they thought, you know, I guess they put everything in the fake drawer gun, grabbing fake guns where the fake and real guns had been mixed in together. And they said that it was just, you know, hand of God or whatever you want to attribute to, luck, rabbit's foot, that no one was killed. And I'm sure that that has happened many, many times throughout the history of Hollywood and making movies, trying to be authentic and all the rest of it. I would think that should be code. Like, why do we have to have a real gun on a film set? Like, I can see where you have codes, you have only certain people have access to the weapons and all that, but I mean, why do we need to have a real gun? Like, we can't do a real for real movie unless we have a real gun that could potentially kill someone. That's got to be present for the authenticity. Culture of racism, white supremacy. So workplace safety. Workplace safety. So let's see. From the reports, let's see, Melvin Van Peebles. They talked about, man, the vaccine and all of that craziness. We have had folks, listeners, who have called in to report that, hey, they refuse to be vaccinated, and even some folks who lost employment. No, Mr. Blue being one, and other folks who just said, you know, staunchly, my mind is made up. I've looked at the information. I'm not going to be vaccinated, even if it's required. And just hearing that thousands, they reported in lots of different locations and different types of jobs, have been terminated, around this vaccine mandate. So that is quite a bit to consider. That's what I said about, you know, the adjustments. I don't know if we have other folks who, if you, you know, changed your mind, which I can certainly understand, if you felt like you didn't want to take it before or were not going to take it and then it was required, if that made you switch your stance, if you feel like, you know, kind of discussing what that process was like, feel free. But I'm sure that has been, just because it's been so reported, I didn't include any reports on it, but Kyrie Irving, basketball player for the Nets, black male, not playing right now, refuses to take the vaccine. And so he's been a source of lots of controversy, name calling. They had protests outside the facility where his team plays basketball. And they had, you know, looked like a lot of white people, and they had the flag, the "Don't Tread on Me" flag. It was looked like a lot of white people who were there, who were protesting, "Get off my man Kyrie, let him play." And crazy times. Again, I would not discuss any of that in the workplace. Pro vaccine, against vaccine, what do you think about Kyrie? None of that. Like, I do not discuss vaccine status in the workplace. That word, you can even leave workplace off. I don't discuss vaccine status. Thank you, Kylie, and just boop, keep it moving. Let's see. Yeah, at the whole Rust set shooting, safety, they said that word repeatedly, safety, and that they're supposed to have safety protocols. They said even a daily safety meeting, and they said the staff had walked off. They were upset about conditions. They walked off. They were replaced. They said they didn't know if they had time for their morning safety meeting, which may have contributed to this, you know, tragic loss of life. Safety protocols and seeing that they are being followed is so important. Generally, that's one of the first things that they do in a situation like this. Were there any violations of protocols, codes, procedures which led to this death. That's one of the first things that they do while they are investigating, that I'm sure that they're doing right now. That's how that information gets reported. Like, oh, maybe they didn't have the safety meeting that morning. If you work in any sort of job, we have some folks even who've called in who say, hey, I work in, you know, film crew and that sort of thing. Should ask them about safety conditions. If there are rules that are supposed to be followed to ensure that everyone is safe, be sure that they are being followed. And if they are not, speak up. That might be black self-respect for you. If there are other non-white people who work there, but I mean, first and foremost, you don't want to be the one that they're pointing the gun at. Pow, pow, pow. Yeah, black self-respect. Speak up. If rules are not being followed, that could result in someone being injured. And even if the rules are being followed, some people some places of employment, they just don't have a regard for safety. They allow for a lot of reckless conduct, even during working hours. So you might need to point that out. You can even do that with questions. Do we think this is a safe way to operate business? Do we think this is a safe way to conduct business? Is there a way that we conduct business in a more, in a way that would be less likely to result in someone being injured or harmed? That those types of questions. Has anyone ever been injured with these types of practices? You know, lots of ways you can just stay in the question lane if unsafe practices are being carried out. Let's see. Speaking of unsafe, they talked about rideshare with Lyft. I think I saw that the end of last week, and that just carried over into this week where they continued. But they said thousands of reports of sexual harassment. And I'm not surprised, because in a vehicle, like, that's such a confined space. And I mean, it's not like most vehicles, or at least most vehicles that I've been in, it's not like they have an eject button. So if somebody's getting on your nerve, you can, you know, boom, and you know, they go flying out of the vehicle or something. Or at least I haven't been in those types of vehicles. Maybe, you know, Tesla has hooked it up. But I mean, that's kind of a dangerous, or it can be a dangerous and confined space. And then alcohol, again, what is that moron? He says, sobriety. But anyway, it's such a confined space. Like, you would really have to have a code, about, you know, this is going to be for my safety. If I'm going to do rideshare, male or female, this is going to be my code. Make sure that I'm safe. This is what I'm going to do. This is what I'm going to tell people before they get in the vehicle. Might even have to be a code about people who are under the influence, you know, to really be careful, because they'll have all kinds of lame excuses. Well, I wasn't thinking correctly, and you know, that. Yeah. Super dangerous. That's the way that I read that. Like, safety. And I'm not even sure if having a camera per se, if that would make that much of an impact. I think so many people have just gotten numb to the camera that, you know, doesn't necessarily deter their criminal conduct in many instances, especially if they're under the influence. I mean, a lot of this, what they're calling air rage, white people being violent and criminal on airplanes, a lot of them have been filmed. So yeah, I don't see much of a deterrent in, you know, we're going to make sure that there's audio and video recording at all time. I mean, it just, you know, could amount to a snuff flick type of a thing. You know, maybe I'm being nihilistic. Let's see. The segment where they talked about college graduation being a college grad, and does that impact you being employed? And that ends up being a way to restrict employment. And it was said in the title, especially for non-white people, I think they said people of color, but you know, of course, the thing that came to my mind immediately, aside from what they gave in the report, but Clarence Lussain, we just heard from him last week. He was on Democracy Now talking about the death of Colin Powell. And he, years before all of that, he wrote a book, Pipe Dream Blues, which talks about the so-called drug war and cannabis specifically. And at the beginning of that book, he writes, black unemployment rates are twice that of whites, and a white high school dropout, Mark Furman, will have a better chance of finding work than a black college graduate. That's what I thought about when I heard that, like the racism, white supremacy, both ways, that if you don't have a college degree, that'll be our excuse for not hiring the Negro. If you get a college degree, we're more likely to hire a white high school dropout than a black person with a four-year degree. That's what domination looks like. Anywho, that whole report, aside from all of that, I think we've had the report on the occupational handbook, so that you can see what salary is going to kind of look like in the next 10 years, and you know what training you need, and lots of those you don't need for your education. So that's like two different weeks in a row. Hearing that, I think that's great. I thought it was curious. That might not be the best word, but that's the best that I have at the moment. I thought it was curious when the reporter asked, you know, college, should people go? And they had a white female. She responded and she said, yes, everyone should go to college. It's for making good citizens. And I just thought, what? What does that mean, a good citizen? Not to mention the fact that, I mean, college is kind of a exclusive experience. I mean, the numbers for some time, I'm certain, well, I don't know, they said that they plummeted in terms of college enrollment. It plummeted during this time of the Rona. So, yeah, I'd be curious to see, but I know for it, at one point, it was a very exclusive thing, like less than 50% of folks in the United States graduated from a four-year institution. You know, I mean, they brag about it being an exclusive thing. That's a part of Varsity Blues, right? All of that. And keep that in mind, too. Like, a lot, I mean, meritocracy and all the rest. Like, we'll use that as a means of exclusion when you have the whole scandal and we're just lying and cheating through all of this anyway. That's one thing that they've talked about during the pandemic as well, that there's been a rash of cheating because so many people are unproctored now. They've been, school has been virtual for the past, you have to check in with our young scholar, Bay Area, see what he's been up to, because he has not been virtual. But for so many people, it's been virtual for the better part of 2 years now. And hey, it's no one around. It's no professor. You're not taking an exam in a room full of students where they can watch you and all the rest. You're chilling at home. You're on the honor system, on the road to becoming a good citizen, whatever that means. They haven't said that, oh, wow, this has made the process so efficient. And, you know, we've observed people just working down and studying and being scholars since they got nothing else to do. And they've said the scourge of cheating repeatedly over and over and over. And what are we going to do? And there's been so much of it. And people are tempted. They're stressed. Same lame excuses. And this would be another one. Since college is such an exclusive environment, this would have to be a lot of white people cheating. But anyway, let's see. Oh, and then the paid family leave, That's another one. All of those infrastructure things, paid family leave, and they said that would be in line with the rest of the industrialized world, meaning other predominantly white countries. We are not going to do anything like that in terms of healthcare, infrastructure, none of that, particularly while you have white genetic annihilation and all they've been talking about with the census and everything else. There's not going to be any, you know, pay. You're going to tax billionaires to make sure that a growing non-white population can have 12 weeks of paid family leave? Give me my gun. That's what you can expect, in my view. I could be, well, I mean, hey, the proof is in the bill. and what's been redacted. That was one. Said they already know that's coming. No surprise there at all. The number again is 720-716-7300. Decode 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. I'll read one email and then nab some of the folks who dialed in with a question or, you know, commentary to share. Hopefully things are going well. You can, you know, share some techniques to help other folks get to your wonderful position. Let's see. So one person wrote in. Oh, we got that. Like I said, lots of folks wrote in. Lots of folks wrote in with that one. These should be correct. I think I said that already. Should be corrected in terms of the neutralizing workplace racism for last week. If you checked it earlier in the week, just go back and wherever you download and or stream the context of white supremacy, it should be corrected. So if you have not checked within the last 24 hours, go back, check again. I think I even made a separate download so that it should pop up as a maybe a completely different episode in your stream. You might see two episodes for neutralizing workplace racism for last Friday, which was October 22nd, and just check the most current one, I guess, and that will have the recording from last week. Should be there, I promise. Let's see. Number again, 720-716-7300. The code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Let's see. Bay Area mom, mother of aforementioned Bay Area scholar, should be with us.
Can I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you. Greetings to you and everyone participating in the program. Oh, let me go get my notes. What did you say about the boy? I don't know. I'm telling him to call him or I'm going to email you or something, and he could hook up something. Y'all could do whatever. We can call him or something. So he is completely in person. I don't know if he has online classes, but I think he tutors online too. So, but he's in person totally. Let's see what I want to talk about. In the beginning you did the recording with Neely Fuller talking about people keeping their jobs and not taking things that don't belong to them and coming on time. And what was the guy, Jalopy, and how he, I guess he was talking about the guy from Vietnam and then ended up telling the personal story. But the guy, I guess they call him Jalopy. And how he wasn't as, as educated, or because he's a Billy Reader, right, and stuff like that. But he was reliable, basically, and he was trustworthy as far as being able to be relied on at work without having to stress or wonder if anything's going to come up missing, because I'm sure he got several tests to even know that he, was that kind of guy. So, and then, of course, we call him, make up names and give him names, nicknames like Jalopy. But, and then the answer was, I keep him around even, you wonder why I keep him around. I keep him around because he won't steal. So I thought that was, I have to make sure I tell my children that. I do tell them, but I got to keep reiterating because it kind of shows that they watch you, not just, you know, they don't need to take anything that doesn't belong to them, but it does show that you're always on surveillance. And then the unemployment, how the unemployment rate, well, I guess it went down from whatever it was before, but where it is right now, and then just the different reasons and how, even though they're adding jobs, they've removed, there's so many jobs that won't come back. So some people don't even qualify for some of the jobs that they've added. And especially with what you were talking about with the college degree, a lot of people don't qualify just automatically because I know I don't because I don't, hey, I got that degree when I got out of high school, so I didn't have time to do, you know, your children's turn, so that kind of thing. But a lot of people won't be able to get some of the 50,000 jobs because they may or may not qualify. And then, of course, like the ladies were talking about with the hospitality jobs, how there's basically Vegas is, oh, dear, has to be awful because a lot of those people relied on those jobs. And then some of the casinos, and then there's no security. I guess the workers complaining, you know, stressing that, it, you know, it's kind of uneasy. And then the lady that didn't have her job, you have to give up your job because you got kids, you know, that kind of thing. And even the nurse that got fired right before her 15th year of working, where she was working because of the mandate. And even with the ride share, how they're assaulting the women, that's why I don't like the Uber or Lyft to be a driver. And it is scary just riding with them because you just don't know who has the driver's license and past, you know, the background and what they're thinking about while you're in the car. And even as a driver, you don't know who you've picked up because all you have to have in order to even ride is a phone and a method of payment. So, well, I guess maybe your ID or something, but not a lot of information is required. So I just, I was thinking as I was listening to the clip, I wonder if, because they were acting like, you know, it's not a lot we can do, it's only, you know, 700-800 people that they were assaulted, it's not enough. But if it was a Black-owned Uber or Lyft, just one incident, they would have been discontinued or something, bought out. Something would have happened. So I just thought that was, I don't know, it just crossed my mind when I was listening. But anyway, okay, my worst case from real quick. So I had a vacation, and now I'm back. But on Monday, I didn't go to work. So Tuesday, I go to work. Now, I did get a message canceling my Monday appointments, but I didn't, you know, trip. I just wasn't there. So, go to the first house. That's the AM house. What is it that distinguishes the house? The mom is Japanese and whatever, Spain mom, and that kind of thing. And the little girl had the white dad, so I don't know what how to classify it. But yeah, her. I walked to the door. The door is locked. It's usually unlocked because they're waiting for me, you know, but I rang the doorbell. So I wasn't expecting you today. Her mom canceled. I'm like, well, hell, what? Nobody's telling me nothing. Oh, yeah. Her mom would come on in. What? I come in. I'm like, well, call her so I can see what's going on because, mind you, I haven't been available. So, because I was on vacation, so I don't know anything. So she's like, yeah, you know, she's been sick. You know, I'm sick too. Can you hear it? I'm like, oh, dear. Can you call her mom, please, so I can see what's going on? And so she calls her mom. The mom doesn't answer. And then she calls another number. However it was, she got to reach her. And she said, she said, well, did you cancel for today? She's, yeah, I canceled. And yesterday and today, or yesterday or whatever. So I don't know if she did for what, both days or what. We didn't say, I didn't get the memo. So some of them are getting tested for COVID and some other stuff. And her, I guess that maybe that happened on Monday, so the results come back, I mean, I don't know, a few days after. So, looking. She's like, well, you could stay if you want to since you're here. You know, I'm just, I was just worried about you because, you know, I caught whatever she has. I caught it again. And however, and so her mom's sick, but of course, she's not ever sick enough to stay home. She's at work sick, killing everybody else. So now the little girl jumping around. I'm like, well, okay, I'm going to go. she's like, we'll see you tomorrow. Cause you're like, I'll see you soon. I don't know what tomorrow. Because I just don't understand what's the point. Come back tomorrow if you pick today. What is coming? What is coming back tomorrow? What's the difference? I might as well stay today. Come back to know tomorrow. The results come back. And that bothers me, too, with whatever this crap is when you're getting tested. I don't care if you passed the COVID test. Yay, good for you. My thing is, doggone it, you have something that's contagious. So I don't want that. It's not even about COVID. It's whatever it is that it's contagious. And then I have to go back to work just because you passed the COVID test. Doesn't mean whatever you have is not still contagious. It's such a bother. So now I'm sitting in my car because I'm typing up somebody, what is going on? So I'm talking to my supervisor. That's a black lady. And so she said, whatever, you know, basically it should have been canceled and da da da. Sorry. Da da da. So, to let me know that she went to take the test or something. And I'm just, this is crazy. So before I got in my car, the grandma said, yeah, she's, you know, they're dressing up. She's going to wear her, she wasn't wearing pajamas, but I don't want her to wear the pajamas, you know, because the weather is a little, because it was a little wet from rain, because we had rain for about a week. So, and I'm looking, I'm like, oh, she went on to school. So she hasn't missed a day at school, sick, super sick. So now the grandma's like, yeah. She's doing, you know, she's just wearing regular clothes. So she said she probably caught whatever she caught. So now my grandma caught it too. She probably caught whatever she caught from some name she named, and I said, who? And then she repeated the name. I said, oh, I don't know who that, you know, I don't know. Okay. And then so she said, yeah, they came to substitute for you when you wasn't here. I said, She's like, yeah, because she said she was off for the first 3 days because she kept missing, only got made Thursday and Friday because she was missing some days because she had, wasn't feeling good. And then she had waiting on these results. You just go from not feeling good to taking the COVID test, not taking care of yourself and nothing. I just don't understand. So she must have took the test whenever, let's say Monday, got the results Wednesday, and it's, you just, okay, I don't have COVID. Okay, I'm ready to go back to work. No. So anyway, she did that, came right to work on, I guess, Thursday and Friday, to where I'm not saying she had it or not. But because you don't know that lady, you never met her, and you're in there talking, you told this lady that you could be exposed to COVID, and you could have had COVID. and now her, the whole house that you were just at is sick. And even if it could have came from the school, you just made that another option just because you talk so much, because you should have been at home since you don't have COVID. Woo! You should have stayed out the other 2 days because you were contagious with something. Maybe somebody, because by Monday, session is canceled. By Tuesday, I'm walking into a death trap, and I'm just, so I just, was very livid for the whole day. So instead of just canceling for the whole week, you just play games. Okay, so now the test come back on Wednesday, maybe she's fine. Do you feel comfortable coming in? So basically, I didn't, and I didn't go in, and I just thought it was dangerous. Mom is even more sick now. So mom is sick. So now they canceled the appointment for Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday because mom is sick now. So we don't know if she's still at work sick, but now she's sick. But the little girl passed her test. So it's just really a bother and very dangerous, especially with people just trying to get rid of their kids like that. Nobody's thinking. Anyway, just breathe. So the last of it is I checked my calendar on maybe Tuesday when I went to work. And the Spanish-speaking white lady supervisor emailed me and made an appointment to overlap me. Now, mind you, I put in for my vacation, so there is no reason to not know that I have no clients on my calendar. You know that if you're looking. If you're not, then too bad. So my calendar is blank. My calendar's no people blank. So when you go to overlap or add or look at my schedule and throw yourself on there, there's no, oh, she's not there. Nope, she probably did that on purpose knowing I wasn't there to make an appointment to overlap me. So then I get this message, are you in session? So I never answered her because I wasn't there. And I don't know. I understand. So yeah, so she hasn't come this week since I was in session. I haven't seen her or heard from her, but before my vacation, she decided to do an overlap. Wasn't there. I missed it. So yeah. And that's all. And thank you. Oh, and the little boy, now he's jumping over the rail. So the rail is seven steps up is the first flight of steps. And then the rail, once you climb over, you can slide down. He jumps over. So he goes all the way to the top of the rail, the first stairs, jumps over. Boom. It's funny. Does it all day. Boom. Goes in the pantry. Climbs all the way to the top. Jumps down. So I said, hey, grandma, I need you to come check this out because I don't know what y'all doing. Where every time I come up here, this is what I got to deal with. So I need you to come here. Look. See this? So this is what he's doing. I said, so I think you need to put a lock on the pantry so he's not able to come in because one day he's going to fall. And then you're going to be wishing you would have had some structure around here in this house. So then he's on the top shelf, like where you have to need a step stool to put stuff up, storage. He jumps so he can land. Woo! That's those videos or movies. So grandma grabs him or whatever. And then even with dad, I had to ask dad this week, hey, excuse me. Hi, can you help me? Sure. Can you do something with this child jumping over the rail? Because I'm trying to stop him. Yeah, I don't want him jumping over the rail. I didn't give a damn. Well, damn it. If you don't want him jumping over the rail, just stop. He lives here with you. So I'm just really, because I just don't understand what you mean. He lives here. He's jumping over the rail. He's not waiting until I come to jump over the rail. He jumps over the rail. This is what he do. He did it 100 times since I've been here. I'm running, trying to stop him. So he wants me to, he wants to land in my arms. Like, so he'll even go get me for me to chase him so he can jump over there real quick and then jump him and land on the ground real quick. It's awful. So, yeah, working on my exit, but that was it. Thanks for letting me ramble. Have a good one, and I'll mute my line.
When you play around with sex, The joke is on the offspring. That word again, safety. Safety. Even for the children, or especially for the children, safety. Much obliged, Bay Area mom. Number again is 720-716-7300, the code 564-943-pound. Press star 61 if you would like to participate, not for spectators. Back to Bay Area mom. Be earthward, the way that I think the phrase should be said. You can't be early, be on time. I think that one is timeless. Mr. Fuller's anecdote where he was talking about jalopy, that's from like, he said when he was a child. So I mean, he's in his 90s now. So I mean, we'd be talking 30s probably, 1930s. Maybe, I guess, early 1940s, maybe, if he's in his teens, early teens. But, I mean, that is timeless. I've heard that repeatedly from Cal's listeners. I've seen it with myself. It does not end racism being punctual, but I do think in a workplace context or just in a professional setting, period, school would be the same thing. Being on time does count, and you are being watched. That's, you know, since you're going to be watched, being on time, and as he was talking about not stealing, you will get a reputation for those things, and that can serve you well in the workplace. But I think the way the phrase should be is, if you can't be early, be on time. As for the time, I'm glad you got vacation in. I took mental health days myself, which is not the same as a vacation. But either way, I'm glad you got vacation days in. Like, hope you got time at the water here in Washington State. This has been like the coldest October ever. I don't know if Sister Soldier, if she needs a book title, but coldest October ever. And we had the bomb cyclone. Like, this has been like weather-wise, easily the worst October weather that I've seen in Seattle ever. But like, hopefully in California, oh, they had the bomb. I was going to say, hopefully they had good weather so you could go to the beach, but they had the bomb cyclone there too. Tough 2021. Wasting your time, that is such a like consistent component of racism, white supremacy. Like, you go to see your clients, and I mean, with all the technology that we have, it's almost 2022. They could have almost got a drone to like fly over your house and drop you like a Star Cups, you know, cappuccino, and, you know, a bakery item, and, session canceled, have a good day, wear your mask, stay safe, yay from California, you know, it could have been all kinds of goofy things. It's 2022, you show up in the middle of a health pandemic, you show up, oh no, session's canceled, do what? And then, the health component, to see that consistently, where people are sick, and bringing you to an environment where you also could get sick. Like, I mean, that should be like super all kinds of alarms. Like, whoa, that's what we're trying to stop. We don't want vectors of contagion and people that are ill, having people come over unnecessarily and expose themselves. And I think that's so important too. Like what you said in terms of, this sort of, the word I was going to say was reckless, but I thought, ooh, that's not it. That is exactly it. That sort of recklessness, like, oh man, you know, I was feeling sickly and down. I got my Rona test and it came back negative. So it's all good. Now I'm going back out, going to the club and all the rest of it. Like, what in the world? Like, okay, you don't have the Rona. I don't exactly want whatever else it is that you have, like strep throat or whatever else. Like, let's keep all of the cooties down as low as possible. Like, sit at home, especially working with children, because it's like, I might have to go to somebody else's house, I might have contact with another child, you don't know if I have children myself that I'm going to be in contact, and just me, period, like, for my own health and wellness. why, you know, the unnecessary risk and exposure. I think that's just wasting time and energy and then compromising the health of non-white people. It's been so much of that so-called essential employees have just been shown total disregard in every kind of way throughout this whole, you know, 2 year experience or whatever you want to call it. In terms of the child, the young fella, and he's diving over the railing there, like, man, Dr. Welsing, she talked about that all the time, that it's so rough. Like, I think you did the correct thing and letting, you know, hey, like, you live here, you know, this is not my child. You all have to set the parameters in place to ensure this child's safety. And again, that television, I think that would be mandatory. Television, there's so much destructive. If we were going to do like old school, we're going to have a little like two columns. And on one side, we write down all the pluses and benefits of television. And then we write down all of the negatives, like, whew, that column with the adverse impact of TV is going to be bulky in comparison to the other side. Like, everybody loves, you know, a good, great narrative and all the rest of it. And who doesn't love a Beyonce video? But I mean, really, if you have, and particularly if you have younger children, no television. Like, I think about every time she calls in with some of her clients, it's either the parents are watching television and that's a distraction for the child, or the child has watched so much television that they, you know, are emulating, and that's, you know, how they relate and think about things. Just all of that, you know, action and animation and everything else, white supremacy, racism, that they just want to act out and be a part of. It has such an amazing, and I mean foundational, really, like, in terms of thinking for the rest of their life and conduct, that television is such an enormous weapon. Rust. No TV in the house. No TV in the house. I think that should be counter-racist code. If you're attempted parents, like, before conception, like, we're going to get the television out of the house. You can still watch, you know, documentaries, constructive films, and all the rest of that. You can still do that without having a television in the house. Just my suggestion. Much obliged, Bay Area Mom. Let's see. Iris should be with us as well. Look for other hands as I see them.
Greetings, Hotep. Pardon me, I'm about to walk back up the stairs, so if you hear noise, that's what that is. I was calling to kind of report back on what I had mentioned. I think it was last Saturday or Saturday before, about me helping an organization. I tendered a resignation, I guess you could say, even though I wasn't like an employee. I was considered a volunteer, and I was getting some like a financial incentive to help out, which helped me out. Because, you know, I don't teach anymore because of the stuff I reported and, the injury and everything. So I figured I could be constructive, make just a little bit of money. It wasn't a lot, but pay some bills that I was going to pay, would have paid subbing. And, give some feedback because the gentleman, non-white, black, I assume he hasn't said otherwise, said that he saw me somewhere else trying to help out another organization, and I walked away from them. Like, I wasn't getting paid by them at all. I just volunteered to try to help them organize, and I let them know, hey, if you aren't codified in your approach, this really will flounder. And, you know, I told them what I based that off, which is the compensatory code. And so he noted that and asked me to help him out. So as time, time went on, it was cool, but then it started to, like, things started to get really compiled. And I was trying to sort everything out, but it was just he, the way he was just rapid. It was just rapid, like, okay, I want to do this. I want to do this. Can you call this one? Call them back. Da 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 da. You know, and I'm doing it in my spare time because it wasn't like, it was just like basically 10 hours a week spread out so I could spread whatever he wanted me to manage out. And he considered me a program manager. But what I realized today, I was acting more like a coordinator. I'm hoping that I'm not incorrect in that thought, because I feel like a manager just kind of does checks and balances and quality control, make sure things are happening along to like benchmarks and deadlines. But I was doing more putting people, talking to people, putting things together, scheduling and stuff like that. So I felt like that was more coordination than anything. And the confusion began when there was a video, because the organization is about health. And he told me he was trying to introduce or what he likes to say, demystify, which to me could be ambiguous for lay people, lay black people, you know, everyday black people. But he basically wanted to make plain what's happening in regard to health and their options for health care through the health department, and also alternatives, because he's traveled and seen alternative medicine, the Vedic medicine, stuff like that. He hasn't been to the continent, so he didn't know about anything there. So he's very Asian influenced or identified, if I can say that. But I thought it was constructive. So I went on a project. I did a project where I went to a vitamin store where he asked me to go and interviewed someone that was very knowledgeable, edited the video, gave it to him, and then someone on the board was like, no, you can't post this at all. Some of this stuff has been debunked. So I asked what went in the video has been debunked, and I was confused. I'm like, why would, if you know that you have people that are going to disagree or that are staunch Western medicine, you know, supporters or whatever, like, I should have been told that. So I could have maybe been at the ready for it and had some kind of, I don't know. I just felt like he knew that they would have that reaction, but he just kind of wanted to wait and see what happened after I submitted the video for them to possibly post to their social media handle. So then he decided he didn't want to do it at all. So that was about 4 days gone. So then the next thing was a broadband, some type of quid pro quo, where low-income people go to a certain hospital and do a survey, and as a reward, they get a free phone from some company. It was called Fano Connect. I spent about 45 minutes getting to the bottom of it. So Fano Connect, I really feel like people should know this, is a shell company for basically the United States Health Department and Census, okay? So the quid pro quo is this. Certain people in certain demographics are targeted to receive the phones for a benefit of broadband. If they already have a phone, they can use the phone like the internet, or they can use the phone. But the white supremacists made a rule that once the pandemic is officially declared over by the CDC, they have to give the phones back. And if they don't, they have to pay for the phone and the service. So I told this gentlemen, I feel as though, I said, I've done the due diligence. I suspect this is a data mining operation for the United States Health Department and the Census Bureau. I do not find constructive value in setting low-income people up with phones that they ultimately have to give back or pay for. Plus, there is no disclosure of like privacy involved. I didn't see it anywhere. He ignored the email. And then going forward, there were some other emails about a dentist visit he had where he was treated with discourtesy. And he was like, so at this time, I'm starting to see, like, whatever these people are offering him, he's taking it in because I guess it's making him look proactive or making the organization look proactive. When really he doesn't even have anything per se that like a vision in his mind. Well, I'll get to that. As far as the healthcare element, like what he came to me with and what he told me he wanted me to do. And I was doing it. So when he went to the dentist and he said he was treated rudely, he said, we need to talk about why people are rude and low income people don't deserve this. And my teeth were in bad shape. And I was told, you keep the teeth, you floss the teeth you want to keep. And so I made note of that. And then also, he said, we also really need to talk about why there are no black and brown people in the dental industry. So I cited his report and I gave a follow-up report because when I read we need to talk about, I thought he was serious because I thought he wanted to come up with solutions. And I also thought other people were going to give feedback so we could brainstorm because it's supposed to be like a brainstorming situation on top of whatever. Let me know if I'm going too long. I'm sorry. I'm trying to reach this up. I thought he wanted solutions, so I gave solutions. I said, number one, we need to give education to non-white people on proper dental care and inculcate to them that not only must you know the proper dental care, you have to practice it. You have to do it at least twice a day. Two, expect discourtesy from people who call themselves experts and professionals. And if that happens, and if they tell you something in a joking manner or rudely, ask them questions in response. Like, for instance, if somebody says, you got the teeth of a pirate, is that a medical term? You know, like, what does that mean? So, well, how do I treat it? You know, and then if the discourtesy continues, you report it to the proper agency with the state that governs dentists. You know. So that apparently didn't sit well with him. And there was some other stuff I mentioned because he was also kind of bringing in branding. And I was like, okay, so is he trying to get money from this company as well? And it was Listerine. I'll just say it. So I mentioned in the email, Listerine has sodium saccharin in it, and it has sucralose, which is an endocrine interrupter. We really need to be careful about what we're about to promote to non-white people as far as health, because, you know, that's what you said you was on anyway. He didn't respond to it. So we kind of got in a confrontation over the phone once. And then later we had a meeting and it was supposed to be about a, quote, radical element that he wanted to implement. So I was like, okay, I really need to hear this because I'll be honest, I'm a Pan-Africanist. I've studied like revolutionaries and stuff like that. So I'm like, okay, let me find out what he's trying to do. So I asked him, what is your definition of a radical? What is your definition of a revolutionary? And I also gave him an article, like an abridged breakdown of the open air concept versus the four wall concept. I said, because you're about to enter into something, I'm not sure you know what you're about to do, what you're attempting to do. And this really, really might not work unless you are extremely codified. And we had some incidences where I tried to tell him about codifying words, especially, you know, like, I'll just say it. There was an event that he wanted to plan. And he said in an email, I've secured a location and a date. So when I saw that, I went and contacted the person he wanted to do the event, and come to find out, I got an email from the place he said he secured, and they said there was no contact made for to even like, can you pencil us in? So I said, I need you to understand that me being in the military, using the word secured has a very strict use. I don't want to, listen, this is his reaction. I have a boundary on the military, so, you know, I don't want to hear it. That's white supremacy. And so going forward, you know, he accused me of being anti-Black because basically I questioned him about the radical element he wanted to implement, which was basically what he calls, what did he say? He said he wanted to represent and like raise the voices of sub marginalized people. That's contemporary talk for LGBTQ XYZ. So I asked him, how does gender sexuality, how is that something we need to focus on in regard to ending racism, white supremacy, and replacing it with justice? Well, we're going to stop saying the word justice because I don't think we have a definition for it yet. So I gave him the definition and he didn't agree with it. So, you know, we got into it a second time. And so I said to myself, here I am doing exactly what the code said don't do, stop squabbling. And he was like, well, just take 7 days and we'll talk in 7 days. So I meditated. I did. I meditated a lot. And I just started using logic. And I think I know why he went the way he did. He's unfortunately a victim of racism that's looking for funding from white people. He wants to make a lot of money. And right now, nonprofits are a hustle. I also believe I know he's sexually confused because it came out later. I don't know if he has a white partner, but he's definitely sexually confused. He calls himself gender binary. So really his goal, his end game is to insert himself in a non-white Black community under the guise initially as health, but ease in and start to proliferate thoughts and sympathies towards sexual confusion. So instead of 7 days coming, and, you know, like hitting them back up, like, oh, what do you think? This is what I think. I just quit. I was like, when you are ready to directly address racism, white supremacy, and assist African people of the Ma'afa, please give me a ring immediately. And I left it there, and I told him thank you for, you know, letting me be of assistance. So, but I had some trouble with it because we had some interactions outside of the professionalism, and I will not do that again. I will not do that again. I had a musical show, and he was like, oh, I'll come to your show. He came with a friend, and we had a good time, and you don't do that. You don't do that. And I also walked away from him because he was calling people coons a lot. And I would ask him, what's the constructive value of name calling? Why don't we just deal with the problem? Like, he even called the lady a coon because she said the worm he didn't have the room. I'm like, well, you actually messed up. Like, who, if there was a coon, shouldn't it be you then? Like, I'll go now because I know I just gave a full... an epic poem. But yeah, I'm kind of still frustrated about it because now he's about to go and insert himself into a part of the community. I've talked to these people. They said they don't want this homosexual crap coming their way. So, but if he gets a hold of these white people money, he's probably going to be able to do it. So.
Well, much obliged, Irie. I'm sorry for your frustration. I can hear your passion and the the conflict that you've had to deal with in all of this, in how you reported on things. I guess kudos for making an effort, not being a spectator, getting out there and trying to do your best to work, you know, with different organizations, trying to work against racism, white supremacy, and share the concepts of counter-racism, what Mr. Fuller has laid out, no name-calling, one of the 10 stops, and, you know, trying to be a little bit more open air about things, and just clarifying, like, what are our objectives? I think that's so important when you're going out and being a part of these groups and things, like just being very explicit. What are we doing? I think anybody, if you're going to get up in front of a group of people, especially Black people, victims of racism, you should be more than willing. In fact, you should be elated. Someone asks you, well, what does radical mean? I'm so, so glad you asked me that question. I was waiting for that question to be asked. This is what it means to be, or this is what I mean when I say radical in this context. And boom, 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 rattle it off. What's your radical plan? I'm so glad that you asked that question. A staff member? Absolutely. Make sure that I'm prepared. You can let me know if I got the home run response if someone should ask a question like that. If people don't respond that way, that's generally a red flag for me. Like, uh-oh, we may have a problem here. And it might just be as simple as they don't know what they're talking about and they're defensive about that, because that's been me sometimes. But either that would still be a problem, because like that is not going to cut it when we go out in public. In terms of, yeah, just the money, people just saying that they can get funding for their nonprofit or whatever it is. And, you know, are we working against racism, white supremacy? Or are we with marginalized groups and something where now we're going to switch and be talking about poor white people or LGBTQI issues and non-binary classifications? Like, just make it plain. Minister Malcolm, be explicit. And again, no one should have a problem with that either. Just being upfront about, you know, what are we organizing for? Why are we investing our time and energy? What are we trying to accomplish? Make that specific. Now, I have never, and I mean never, I didn't participate in ROTC. They talked about that with the leaked Colin Powell. I didn't do ROTC, not drafted, not enrolled, volunteer basis, not the reserves, like nothing. I don't even think they would allow me to walk past Arlington Cemetery. That said, that is my understanding of the term secure as a layperson and an ignorant one at that. You come to me and say, oh, I've secured a facility, like I'm thinking, book it. That's what it means, that you, not just that you talk to these people, like it's done. Like we are in the book, like the days are reserved, like pack your bags, be there or be square. That's what secure means to me. Now, if you have that's another one. Like, what did you mean when you said you secured the facility? Maybe I'll learn something. Maybe I've been using that word incorrectly, and let them explain. That's another one. Shouldn't be a problem, you know, explaining this is what I meant when I said secured, even though I hadn't talked to the people. Now, the name calling, man, I don't, no name calling. I guess we say that on a regular basis. I'm not sure what the justification is for calling someone a coon or anything else, really, if you didn't contact them to set up, you know, all the details, get the date squared away, pricing, all that pertinent information. If you didn't do that, I'm not sure what makes that person a coon or, you know, a reason why we got to call that person a name. And that still doesn't solve the problem. We can call her a coon all day long and we still might have to call her back and not call her a coon for 5 minutes and see if we can get this facility tied down. Or if not, then we have to call somebody else to do the same thing. Make sure we don't name call them while we can, you know, get this place tied down. Hope it's not her cousin that we're calling. Professionalism. That's, just strive to be professional. Even if it's a volunteer situation or whatever, like professional, certain professional ways of doing business, especially if it's, you know, helping out, trying to work with other black people. And I think minimizing conflict, always, that's my challenge for myself. I say that is the tell, not that I can look down on and name call other black people that I don't think, you're not as well informed, you haven't read the books that I have, and you don't know about racism, white supremacy, or you don't talk about it. That's not, you know, how you show that you are more advanced, whatever that means, in a system of racism, white supremacy. In my view, if you have a better understanding of counter-racism, you show that by really working to minimize conflict with other victims of racism, people classified as black especially. I'm not, even if we're in a group and we're working together, we're not going to be up here arguing and tussling and name calling and all the rest of it. That's what we're supposed to be putting a stop to. But doing my best to not quarrel and bicker with other victims, because that's what, you know, things are programmed to happen. So good job in working against that. And sometimes just stepping away, that's, you know, the best thing to do. And especially once it's been made clear, these are our objectives, and you can see like, oh, okay, that's not what I want to invest my time and energy in. This is just going to be more conflict. So, you know, right on. I can do something else with my time and energy. Wish you all the best. Keep it moving. Awesome. You can minimize conflict that way too. Let's see. Number again, 720-716-7300. The code 564-943 pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. I'll say it again just for importance, the way I think it should be said. If you can't be early, be on time. Let's see. Other folks who dialed in with a hand up, line should be open.
Hello.
Our caller in Georgia. Yes, ma'am.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call. I hope everyone's having the best evening they can have. I just wanted to say, well, a couple of things. First of all, in general, because we're all going through a lot of things, some things may be good, but still you want to be able to process them properly. And if you are working, you should always check for your medical plan or whatever. If you have what's called employee assistance program, that's usually the mental health component. You can get sessions. I know where I worked, I signed up for it because I needed some mental health assistance, and I got 10 free sessions. And I'm seasonal, but when I go back, I should be eligible again. So I'm going to try to get some more. I'll probably be in a better place mentally. But since it's paid for and it's part of working there, take advantage of it. Again, it's usually for you and or your family. So if you have family in household, you might be able to do it together. If you're having problems together, spouse, you know, mother, you know, your mother, whatever. So you always want to be take advantage of that. The rust issue, I understand what happened, but it seems very confusing in this day and age, because you can make guns with the 3D printers now. I mean, they give them away in the Price is Right, so they're coming down in price, I guess. I don't know how much they used to be, but you would think a movie starring Alec Baldwin would have had, you know, that company would have some place where they make props, and they can make a prop gun now with the 3D printing. That would be very realistic. Even before then, they always talk about guns being realistic, and that's why they, you know, shooting little black children. Oh, the gun looks so realistic. Okay, whatever. With that, but they have enough real, quote unquote, realistic looking guns where it didn't seem necessary to get a fake, to get a real one for a movie. So I don't understand that, unless you're having a scene where you're examining the gun in detail or something. But again, I don't know about that. In terms of not having a degree for tech jobs, I'm not sure how the technology industry evolved, but it seems like in general, all computers became available and people had to learn as they went anyway. So it kind of makes sense to me in that sector that you may not necessarily need a degree, you just have the experience, because the technology keeps changing. And if you go to school, you know, once you go to school, you may learn one thing, but when you come out with your degree, they may be on to something else. So I'm not saying that a degree in computer science is useless. I'm not saying that at all. But I can see in that particular field why not having a degree having a degree would not be necessary. In some other fields, you know, it all depends. And a lot depends, of course, on what white people have required, you know, us all to do. To the other people that spoke before, you know, stay encouraged. It's great that, you know, one of you is trying to work in the community. That's something I want to get back to doing. And then working with children, of course, you know, we always keep you in our prayers, not just for you, but for the children as well, because we don't need any more crazy adults. So anybody that works with children and tries to bring some sort of order and normalcy to their lives is definitely greatly appreciated. I read an article about a white man, I believe in North Carolina or something. He got fired and he sued for discrimination and he won $10 million. Of course, they're trying to appeal that. They're like, no, he really didn't do his job. But he was fired and a black woman and a white woman or something took his place. I'll try to read that more and have more details for tomorrow. Took his place. So he sued and he won. Then there was another article I read where a black man, I think they were both medical, he was going to be the diversity person, you know, the main diversity and inclusion officer. That's what usually what they call them. But they said his views were too sensitive on race, and they had a list of things, one of them being that he rented a luxury car, and he was like, well, they didn't even ask me. If they did, they would have known that I didn't rent the car, and that he wanted a team. And he was like, well, most executives, which I believe is true, once they get hired, they kind of want to bring their people or have a certain set of people in place to help them because they're the leader in that particular division and creating, you know, the environment that they believe will help not only them, but the company flourish. That's usually what they do. And I guess a more positive note, I feel bad. Sometimes I feel bad, but where I work, I told you I'm going back. And I applied for like the next level position and I hadn't heard anything in a while. So, and I guess no news is good news. But they did finally tell me yes. So when I go back in January to the seasonal, I'm going to go back with this new position and another little raise. I went to work on time, which shouldn't be hard because I work, you know, two steps away. They give you everything to succeed. They give you, and I just, you know, did my work. And this will be my third season. And the two main managers, because I've had several managers, but the main managers that I work for through the tax season, they both had recommended me to get promoted because they like my work. So two different managers. And I interviewed, and I didn't think I did well on the interview, but I don't know if they just need so many people. I don't know. I just say thank you, the Lord, and keep it moving. Thank you.
Congratulations. That is spectacular. Like, don't feel bad about that. Like, get all the nickels that you can. Learn as much as you can in the position when it starts back up. January will probably be here before you know it. So, yeah. Enjoy and get all the nickels that you can. Update that resume. That's like immediate. Like, get that resume all sparkly and show your new position that you'll be starting out. That's spectacular. Like, that right there works against racism, white supremacy, having competent, non-white people working, striving, being ambitious, trying to do the best that they can, living their best life professionally and all areas of people activity. That right there works against the whole niggerization process that they have for us. So, bravo. That is counter-racism 101 right there, or exemplary counter-racism right there, and still counter-racism 101. Let's see. With Yeah, all of that, like I said, with the Russ situation, since she did mention that, all of that is 2022, right? Like, that should be Neanderthal. Like, someone got injured with a prop gun on a film set. Like, what? That should be total caveman. Like, that should have been totally code for that. Even, why do you need a real gun on a set at all? For authenticity? Like, come on, tell the truth. So yeah, that's ridiculous in a variety of different ways. But congratulations on the job. Learn as much as you can. Tell everybody that, like, learn. Hopefully you'll get some new training so you can be really snazzy, in addition to getting all of your nickels in the workplace. And that, I think, is important for non-white people, because I think we hear so much about racism, white supremacy, so sometimes that we won't make an effort to try to get a promotion or an upgrade in the workplace, increase in pay. Many of us are super overqualified. So, bravo. And that makes logical sense, too, about the, I guess, computer science industry. So much of it, exactly. I mean, the technology is constantly changing. So, I mean, regardless of what you learn, you're going to have to do lots of updating and retraining and new learning and OJT out the wazoo. So, yeah, I can see why that would be a field where you probably would not have to have that whole 4 year experience. And not even that I'm downgrading that. I think you said you weren't doing that either. That 2022, you can certainly rethink how you want to do your college experience if you want that at all, like what that has to look like. Virtual, what that's, you know, what you're even pursuing, like lots and lots of different ways that you can, you know, and especially even have to see how things look once COVID-19 is done, whenever that may be, to see, you know, what does the college experience look like then. Anywho, let's see. Other folks who dialed in with a hand up, if you have commentary to share, line should be open. Proceed.
GTR, can I be heard?
Let's see. Is that Helen in New York? Yes, ma'am.
Helen? Yes. Hi. White woman, so-called Hispanic, got the job. She asked me about the Gabby Petito situation, and I played dumb, like I didn't know. Like, I don't know too much about it, but of course I've heard about it because it was everywhere. And I was like, I think I heard something. And she's like, oh, I can't believe that you're not paying attention to this. You know, this woman is missing and blah, blah. And I'm saying to myself, whatever. And then when they found her fiance's bones, again, she comes to me. Oh, did you hear about, and she said his name. Like, I didn't really remember his name. So I really didn't know what she was talking about at that moment. And she's like, you listen to the radio all day long. You listen to 1010 News and you don't know what's going on. You don't know that they found his bones. Like, she was visibly disgusted and frustrated with me for not, you know, paying close attention to this story. And I'm like, I've been busy, you know, working. Like, I've had a lot on my mind, like work. So that's why I'm not paying attention. Yeah, it's just background noise. The radio is just background noise. And she walks away again, disgusted. Most white people, they ignore me, but every once in a while, they'll ask me a question. They'll just come out of nowhere and just ask me a question, just turn. So the other day, today, this white guy, he asked me, he was like, oh, you know, have you seen any good movies? Not anything important, anything, movies. I'm like, nah, I don't really watch too much movies. He's like, oh, well, I saw a really good movie, From Here to Eternity, Delectable Negro Moment, because you don't even care, like, how I'm doing or anything like that. You're just going to, you know, tell me about your day and what's going on with you and, you know, that you saw this movie. Like, do I want to hear this? No. But okay. So I just make a mental note of the movies that are mentioned, and later I watch them. And I'm part of a book club called CRWS. And we're doing Race Cold War right now. So the book, Race Cold War, will help me to hopefully decipher From Here to Eternity. That's the movie that the white guy mentioned to me. And that's all for now.
Much obliged, Helen in New York. The random questions that are not related to the workplace. Do you know any good movies? Have you kept up with the Gabby Petito case? I think all of that, it's not really, that's not what we're paid to be discussing. I don't have anything to say about that at all. Like, I think that's A+ in zero. Like, she comes, oh, do you keep up with the latest, the Petito case? Oh, I haven't been following it, no. And then she gets an attitude. What? This beautiful white woman is missing? Blonde white woman is missing? And you're not paying attention? Now, why is that even important? You know, beyond all of the things that are happening in the world, you're upset about that. Even the fact that you're upset, like, wow. Wow. And then she comes back, like, to follow up, like, I gave you one chance. I'm going to come around and see if you got your act together, like, and ask you the next time around, like, no. And then she's been paying attention, like, you sit there and listen to this radio all day long, WBAI every day. Like, wow. All of us got us under surveillance, know our habits. Like, how do you sit there and listen to the radio all day long? You don't know what's going on. What? I'm focused on my work, or, you know, I try to be. That's what they pay us to do, not keep up with the tabloids and such, but I'm trying to just do my work. And she stomps off. In my opinion, that's A+. That's what you're supposed to do, not get into some long dialogue about, you know, what you think happened in the case, and, oh, isn't it a tragedy, or whatever. Like, none of that is, you know, appropriate, correct behavior for the workplace. Neither with the movie situation either. I think that's the perfect way to handle things. Now, we had totally different responses. When you said, or your response, mentally at least, he comes, do you know any good movies? No, I don't really watch movies. I don't, you know, have a lot of time. Beautiful. Right to the point. And no follow-up. Not just this week, like, oh, okay, I can't ever come and, you know, waste 5 minutes of her time talking to her about movies. She's thinking Delectable Negro, which it totally is. Like, that's, you know, exactly in the book. They consume your time and just, I've already told you this is not even an area of interest for me, but you're going to insist that we talk about it. It's not even that we talk about it, that I listen to you and that you just get to eat away at my time for no reason at all to talk about something that I have no interest in at all. I was thinking when he said From Here to Eternity, like, oh, that's on Mr. Fuller's list of movies. Like, he mentions that one all the time, like Burt Lancaster and all the rest of it. I guess that was a big to-do way back when. But one of those World War II movies from back in the, I think Frank Sinatra might have even been in that back in his heyday. So they had a whole all-star cast. But yeah, that is on Mr. Fuller's list. That's so interesting. Out here, lots of times, race soldiers will mention movies that are on his list, especially if they're a little bit older. They will mention some of his to-do. Or I guess Shawshank Redemption, lots of people love that one, period. So, anywho, great job, in my opinion, though, in deflecting. We're not here for casual chit-chat. And it's not even like they're coming to talk to you about workplace things where you could learn about the job that we're doing and be more informed to be in a better position to get that raise. No, you just want to come and talk to me about some nonsense, some tabloid, you know, foolishness, and then get an attitude because I'm not informed about it. That's Delectable Negro right there too. Like, I'm not even paying attention to all of this, and you're come and demand that I spend my time looking up Gabby Petito and her fiance suspect in this case and all the latest information. What does it mean to be white? Let's see. Other folks who dialed in, number again, much obliged, Helen in New York. Number again, 720-716-7300. the code 564-943 pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Let's see. Other folks dialed in. If we have missed you totally, proceed.
Can I be heard?
Yes, ma'am. Z's mom?
Yes, this is Z's mom. Greetings, everyone. I was just calling in to give some, I guess, constructive advice. I don't know if you remember, but a couple weeks ago, I had tendonitis in the wrist, so I wasn't able to work for about a month. And I found this black male doctor. I think he does the osteopath. His name is Dr. Levi Harrison on YouTube. And he has videos on hand exercises and wrist exercises for anyone who does any sort of repetitive work. So he has some for like barbers, seamstress, musicians, or people who are just typing regularly. I found them to be really informative and helpful, and I actually found that my wrist is doing a lot better. So I just wanted to share that just in case anyone is dealing with any sort of wrist or hand issues, or just, you know, like to kind of like a preventative measure to start doing those type of exercises. He says that doing them really prevents carpal tunnel in the future. So that's all I had to say, and I'll mute my line.
Much obliged, Z's mom. Preventative information techniques, that is always important. Catch things before they become a problem. And I said that in yoga teacher training, like tendonitis in the wrists, so common because so many people are having bad posture, doing lots of sitting and typing, and not having ergonomic form when they type, end up having all kinds of wrist pain. And I mean, that can be really debilitating, just to constantly kind of have nagging pain in your wrist and hand area. And people coming to try to do yoga and then even being stifled there because you can't, you know, put too much weight on your hands and such. But yeah, any sort of preventive measures that work so that you don't have to deal with that at all, bravo. Getting up and stretching so that you're not sitting for long periods and typing, in addition to making sure that you have good posture and good form for your hands, wrist supports if necessary, so that you can prevent all of that in the first place. If you are someone, you have to spend a lot of time sitting at a desk and typing, coding, or, you know, whatever it is. Taking care of your health, super important, way beyond COVID-19. Let's see. Other folks dialed in with a hand up if we missed you totally.
Nick over the road. Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Greetings, everyone. I wanted to ask you, I think last week you mentioned something about your Amazon wish list. You still doing that, right? Because I took care of something that was on there. I just want to make sure you got it. Okay. I sent you an email with those for the brother that was asking for work opportunities for felons or whatnot, or ex-convicts. Sent you an email with about 4 or 5 resources. Just wanted to let you know that. And, yeah, I'll mute my phone.
Much obliged, Nick over the road. He did indeed send the email. Much obliged for the wish list as well, and all the other folks who have invested. But Nick over the road did send the email. We had a person who dialed in. This was on workplace racism, I believe. Let's see. Yep, got it right there. This was, I believe, mentioned on workplace racism to begin with. I may be incorrect about that. But I think the person called in basically, and they were saying they had an uncle, older person, who had been in greater confinement for, I believe, like 3 decades. They were recently released and looking for employment opportunities. And we mentioned, I told folks, email in. So Nick over the road wrote in, Swift Transportation might hire and train new drivers. Swift Transportation. So I guess you can check that out online and see. And then, oh, and then he has listings because we talked about some places they get a tax credit for hiring folks who are ex-convicts and the like. They will take that federal money. So there are, I guess, places they have government websites that I can share. I guess I'll just tweet these. I'll tweet and Facebook both of these. But they have government websites that have information on job training programs and the like for folks who've been in greater confinement. They have one, I guess, in Los Angeles. I don't know what type, what part of California this person was in. California is such a big state, but they have one for Los Angeles and I guess one in general for California. But I will post these links on social media so people can just go to Twitter, Facebook, and they should be posted there. I guess if you get confused, you can drop an email, but should be super easy. I'll share those and any other resources that folks find for folks who might be in need of employment opportunities who have been in greater confinement, share. With a lean to California, because that's where this request came from. Let's see. Much obliged, Nick over the road. Let's see. Other folks who dialed in, if you have commentary to share, we missed you. Line should be open. Proceed.
May I be heard?
Caller in Florida. Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much, sir. Greetings to Gus, the host, the listeners and callers. I wanted to start out with myself and another victim that works on the, as I say, the civil area. There was 2 reports I received from her. One report is where she was describing some unjust networking that started out with she needed to get a ride home. So she asked another black female for a ride home because I believe her daughter, I guess, got locked out of the house. And she just went to the desk that she's been assigned for just like almost 2 minutes. And she described going around the opposite way up the ramp and down the stairs. And 2 white women, that's a part of the clique, and that on that side of the office, they got startled when they saw her and just started walking off. Well, one started walking off like, you know, obviously they were talking about her. And she just, she said, you know, she was about to say something, but the black male walked up and was like, is there a problem or is there anything wrong? He just said that generally because she described that she thought he could sense the tension. And the white woman, the younger one, was like waiting for her to say something. So she said in her instinct, she called another black person in this person's place and said, oh, don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. I already got a ride. So she just got suspicious, you know, from this, I guess, gossip, unjust networking that was going on. And she said that this connected to about three other white women, one from the area that I work on or work in, said, oh, yeah, you know, you're going out to eat with us, right? You know, so they apparently now all of a sudden are manipulating this black female that, you know, they're having her, the only one now, only black person, go out to eat for evening dinner. And I'm not sure what happened with that, but those two events happened with that. And well, those two events happened this week, and then which led to another older white woman that is a part of this chat. So they are, you know, vicious. She described to me that this white woman was trying to get her to speak unfavorably about the white woman that works at the counter, one of the ones that walked off when they saw her. And she said something about, well, what's going on with blank? Named her name. Is she trying to start a war? She used the term war. And the victim responded like, I don't know what she's trying to do. That has nothing to do with me. I'm just trying to grab these papers. And she just picked them up and walked off. So that was interesting. She used the term war from what was reported to me. And there's a white man. I think he may be like a homosexual or something. He was speaking to a black male because I do my own routes at 3 o'clock. So 3 o'clock, he was speaking to the guy and they were talking about martial arts, jujitsu. And then I came back around at 3:30, and the I had asked them, are you being constructive or something like that? I was asking them if he was being constructive, and he said kind of something like that. And the black male responds, well, you know, I don't want to be working from 9 to 5 all my life. I want to get to where I can get my own business, something like that. And the white guy responds saying, yeah, you know, you want to be your own boss. You want to make your own money or something. So the black guy says, you know, maybe if I can just sit here and continue to keep talking to, and he named the white person, maybe he can get my brain clicking. So the white man, he says, and I'm walking off. I don't want to get your brain clicking. I want to choke you in jujitsu. He said, I don't want to get your brain clicking. I want to choke you in jujitsu. So I turned around. And I'm like, are you serious? Why are you trying to sound so, well, why are you sounding so violent? And he's like, well, what do you mean? What do you mean? We're just talking. And he looked back to the black guy and says, do you feel threatened? And the guy shook his head like no or whatever. So I just walked off. My next one was, I was coming in with a cart with paper on it, and I heard a white woman who is the supervisor. She was saying, oh, well, there he is, doing what he does best or whatever. And he's the delivery. And then I could tell she was about to say delivery boy, but she cut herself off. And I just continued just going by. And that was another one that I had wrote down or whatever. And there was some anti-blackness. I was in the break room, so I'm growing my hair out. So it's a judicial assistant that works up in the child support area, right? So she's like, man, I hadn't seen you in a while. It looks like you're really trying to grow that hair out, right? So are you going to get cornrows or anything like that? I said, nah, I'm just growing it right now. So on the way walking out, she says, you know, you're going to get cornrows or, you know, are you going to look like one of those guys in my courtroom? So I don't know where that came from. I just happened to just walk into this person. And other than that, that's pretty much all I have to share right now. Thanks for allowing me to speak.
Jinkies. Much obliged. Our caller in Florida. We've heard a lot of reports about black people having problems with hair in the workplace, even if it's just snide, racist comments. And or sometimes that'll be the justification for why you don't get a job or why you're fired or, you know, that you didn't have a college degree and you had all that, you know, Negro hair or on your face being shaved, lip beard. That'll be the justification. Let's see. The victim. Now, he says she's going to do something constructive, family, you know, problems she's trying to solve. And they see her coming. And they ran as though they were in fear. Like, and she saw that she's going to say something. Now, I said, man, we've had, you know, it seems like this. They do this at the courthouse. They had the one previously, I think he said it was a white man, saw a black female coming and called her, oh, the devil. And, you know, like hopped over the banister or whatever. Like, oh, my gosh, you know, she'll kill us all. Like, you know. Again, are we in kindergarten? Like, now this seemed, you know, like they weren't even joking around. Like, at least he had some sort of tacky pretense that, oh, I'm just joshing around, just a little tomfoolery. Like, this seemed like they were generally trying to be like, gotta get away, oh my gosh, here she comes. And she said she was gonna say something, you know, about all of this, and the black guy comes and intervenes, sounds constructive, like, you know, is everything okay here, you know, is there a problem? He could kind of sense the tension, and she just said, you know, I'll get another ride, I'll figure it out, you know. That's to have that type of just totally unnecessary conflict in a work environment, like, and with everything that's happening right now, everything that everybody's having to deal with, like, man, like, not we got your back and everything, just have folks that are plotting, scheming, you're always seen as some sort of threat, we're gossiping and all the rest about you. That's the workplace, and at the courthouse, no less. It's supposed to be about so-called fairness, justice. Let's see. The black fella is there. Now he's talking about he wants to be his own boss and he can, you know, have some sort of constructive career. All that's great. I have said, in my experience, black people in a workplace setting where they are sounding, what did I tell caller in Georgia? Congratulations. She got that promotion, get a raise, new position coming up. At the beginning of the year, like, that's spectacular. That works against racism, white supremacy. Having black people who are keeping their head to the sky, as Maurice White would say. Ambitious. I'm not content with things as they are. I can do better. We can do better. That works against white supremacy, racism. So that's what this fella is embodying, it sounds like. He wants something better for himself. What is the white guy? Now, it's interesting. The black guy says, I'm going to keep talking to this white guy, see if he can get my brain clicking. That is fascinating. I don't know what that metaphor means. Like, I don't know why he thought this white person would be able to get his brain clicking. But thankfully, we'll say, the white man immediately responds, oh, no, no, no. You are confused, lad. I am not here to get your brain clicking. I'm here to choke you. Now, unfortunately, this fella, confused, you know, and the white man knows it. Got this coon over here. Do you feel threatened? No way. They can sit there. That guy is crazy. Radical talking about threatened. All I said was, I'm not trying to get your brain freaking. I'm ready to choke you, which I am. Been practicing jujitsu. Want me to try a little bit? I'll demonstrate. See, I can get my thumb around your esophagus. And I still don't feel threatened. I think that might even be in Gavin DeBecker, The Gift of Fear. When you have people that you work with and they, you know, want to intimidate and kind of flex with their martial arts training and kind of brow, I could, you know, make you tap out in 3 seconds. Like, none of that is acceptable for the workplace. That right there, major red flag, having people bragging about being violent, and then they can couch, oh, I was just messing around. I was just joking. I was just saying, you know, I do practice, you know, that I could have you unconscious in about 3 seconds, but I was just joking around. Mm-hmm. And again, now, the whole pretext for this conversation was not UFC fighting. Isn't that Tyson Fury something? We were talking about a constructive career trajectory for this black male, and we end with, oh, I'm here to choke you. You point that out, and, oh, got this radical coon here. What do you mean threatening? What are you talking about? Get that on record immediately. Did I threaten you? No way, boss. See there. Troublemaking coon here, always going around making accusations against people, trying to keep us segregated. They'll throw that in the report. Let's see. Then you come in to do the deliveries or whatever, coming from the mail route or whatever it is. And says, oh, look, there's our delivery. Lots of those slips in the workplace. I think people had reported that even, you know, when they were not paying attention to racism, white supremacy, because, I mean, it's just so common referring to black people as boys and gals, anything but men and women. It's just so, and niggers. It wouldn't have surprised me if it was going to be, oh, there's the delivery nigga. Yes, morning. Good to see you. Yes. Because that's so common, too, when they do all that unjust networking and all that. It's not like they're calling us by our proper name when they, you know, are texting. And once you get in the office out of earshot, so, I mean, hey, I have a slip every once in a while. I have to be better about that. Like, the important thing, I think, is for us not to be surprised. Like, I totally understand. Yes, I'm the delivery nigger. Yes, I might even be the judge nigger. Big difference in salary, I suspect. But, I mean, niggers is niggers. Let's see. Oh, and then there's one more. I miswrote it. The final, oh, I miswrote it. What was the final report? Messed up my own note here.
I'm trying to remember. Did I mention the break room interaction with the black judicial assistant about the cornrows? Like, one of the guys in my courtroom, she used the possessive term my courtroom and the child support.
Oh, now see, as you were talking, it came back to me. It was you letting your hair grow out and them going to the, now I don't remember all the detail about the child support though. That I got when you were talking about your hair and they came in to attack you about that, but I don't remember the detail about the child support.
Yes, sir. And just to add some context, now, I don't know if you remember, this person, I was on the phone, and she said, you know, what gal are you lying to, right? So she made that association that, you know, the gigolo, or, you know, I have multiple females that I'm trying to, you know, deceive or whatever.
sex machine. See, we got a shaft in the workplace. And that's what I said, too. It's never men and women. It couldn't even just be that you're a gigolo and, you know, what woman are you, you know, lying to on the phone? It couldn't be that. It's what gal are you lying to? See, that same thing through and through. And that I wouldn't be surprised about that. You just write that down. We are not men and women. I totally get it. Like, no surprise there. We are in Florida or even, you know, Montana, Washington State plantation system of white supremacy. That's the way that they see us. Little children, little boys and gals. And, you know, they're supposed to be in charge. They are the adults, even if it's a six-year-old white person. That's an adult compared to Barack Obama, Clarence Thomas, any other black person you can think of, dead or alive. The hair, that was the, yes, the hair. It's been so many of us who've reported that problems with hair, even black males, where that is, and they pay attention. That's another one where you can see, boy, they study the Negroes. What is going on? We got all this hair? My goodness. Ugh. All of that. Are you trying to get, you know, cornrows and all the rest of it? Be like Colin Kaepernick? No, just let it grow a little bit. That's all. Wow. Oh, I generally do not hear. I guess sometimes for black females, I will hear where folks will say, you know, complimentary things and it looks great and all the rest. Not always. Even if they work exclusively with black people, that is not always the case. We've got lots of, you know, documentation of that. And that's just another indictment of white supremacy racism. That said, generally with black people, it is never a constructive thing. Like, if you're growing your hair out for locks, cornrows, just to, you know, do the afro, do the Richard Roundtree, any of that, it is generally never smiled upon. Even a beard, retired firefighters say, even the lip beard, none of that is generally seen as, oh wow, that is great, you just look smashing. Oh, we are gonna have the most handsome court staff this side of the Mississippi. We got, man, newsletter. Let's get the newsletter. I mean, woo, look at that. That is never the case. It is, oh my God. Oh, what? Why did you make that decision? Can we shave you today? I got some scissors in my back car. I mean, that's generally the response that I always, Gus T personally, I put my hand up on this one as well. Like, I cannot personally remember a time in my life, even when I worked exclusively with black people, where that was greeted kindly and seen as this is a move that's going to enhance your career, buddy. Like, ooh, you thought you missed out on a raise before? Wait till they see all that hair. Like, oh, that promotion is yours now. Never. Like, I've had black people, white people, all kinds of them go, oof, resume looks good, but oof. Think we can shave you before Thursday. And like I said, I've heard this with numerous other black people as well, in numerous fields. So, yeah. Good luck with that. I guess you can report how all of that folds out over the next few months or so with the new growth. Let's see. Much obliged, our caller in Florida. Did we miss anybody? Any folks that we missed totally with commentary to share? Let's see.
Dustin, have you heard?
Yes, sir.
Hi, good evening, Gus. I'm calling. I was wondering, calling about the emails, and I turned in my another complaint. I wrote another complaint, a retaliation complaint against a race soldier. And they received it, and I think he might be in some big trouble because since I turned it in on Monday, and since then, another victim that's in management told me that he's been acting real nervous, and his other henchman that was following me around, he hasn't been seen in the last 2 days, but he told me, my friend that's in management told me that the board members are thinking about pulling his keys and sending him home because the stuff that I wrote in there was, I also provided with evidence too, not just a report, but I put, I list all the evidence as exhibits A through G, that type of stuff, with all the photos and emails and everything. So it was really damning, you know. So he's going to be in some hot water. He might even lose his job. So, I have no feelings for him, because he tried to destroy me by besmirching my character. But, you know, like I said, man, thanks to your show and all the people that have, you know, chimed in, you know, to give me good directions how to document and write precisely how you were victimized, you know. But that's all I have for now, Gus. I'll keep you updated.
That is, man, that's spectacular. Spectacular work on your part, what I mean. That's the whole, you know, why we do this broadcast specifically, neutralizing workplace racism, like, to give people, hopefully, just some basic fundamentals to kind of start with, and then you can use logic to figure out what's happening, and then the best course of action to neutralize that as best you can, and hopefully by yourself, because it's generally not going to be anybody to grouse, and it frequently might not even be anybody to call a coon and say, man, you should help me do this or help me do that. Person generally might not even be there. So you have to be a really effective army of one. And I think what you just said, document, document, document. And sometimes that means take pictures, you know, so that you have lots of evidence and time stamped evidence to, you know, reveal exactly what has been happened to help corroborate, you know, what it is you're saying, whatever charge, accusation that's being made about your mistreatment. And if the person, you know, you being able to hand over all this information and getting reports like, oh man, Teddy is nervous. Woo, he could get in some big time trouble. Like, they might, you know, take his keys and send him home. He could get fired or, you know, whatever it is. Like, hey, that just shows the power of documentation. Now, they may keep him on and sensitivity training or whatever else. He may get fired. They may make that decision. But I would just continue documenting, continue being super competent and professional as you've been throughout the whole ordeal. And yeah, you know, they'll figure out, you know, how best to deal with him. But I think just being professional, documentation, same thing right up there with folks talking about being early for work, just the basics, and being professional in covering your code of conduct. So when they start looking at reputations, and this person probably has a history of some sort of incorrect behavior before, so I'm sure it's a paper trail of, you know, this type of character with the allegations that have been made. So yeah, just if anything, it's just further evidence, in my view, further evidence.
Yes, Gus. Sorry to cut you short, Gus, but one more thing I'd like to add is, you know, the words you use when you usually interview white guests, the word subjugation. That's a very important word, because in the second hearing, where he tried to say I was intimidating, I was hostile and intimidating. And I put in my write up that I wasn't threatening or intimidating to him. It was the fact that I asked him specifically to give me the meaning of the word logic, the meaning of the word insubordination, and the meaning of the word gesticulation. And I put in there that it was not so that I was hostile to him, is that he was trying to subjugate me, you know, to bring me under his dominance, you know. So it's really extremely important for victims to write exactly what they were feeling at the time he was practicing racism against them, white supremacy. And they need to put exactly what they were feeling with the precise words. The same way they use words against you is the same way you use words against them. That's all I got, Gus. But thanks for everything, Gus.
Thank you for Thank you for sharing, sir. Words are very important. That was a big part of what he had shared previously about all these incidents, just getting people to explain their terms, especially if an accusation or a charge is being leveled against you. What do you mean? And explain that. That's exactly, that is a perfect word to describe, because that's what he's doing. If this is someone in a position of power in a workplace setting who's making these sorts of charges, absolutely, they are trying to subjugate you, make sure that they get you back under firm control. And in this case, that's just total mistreatment. All you do, I'm just trying to get clarification to do my job, and I'm just being repeatedly subjugated, falsely accused, subject of retaliation, it seems, could all be the case. Document. Use words and asking questions. Super, super important. When you ask someone to explain a term that you're using, that's also in the question lane. So asking questions and making sure that your questions get answered. Bedrock of counter-racist codification. Did we miss anybody? Any of the folks who dialed in with a hand up, with these suggestions, comments they wanted to make?
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir. Our caller in California.
I just wanted to say thanks to the person who sent you the information regarding the inmate. Regarding my uncle's job opportunities. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Much obliged. I was able to post on @UntilJustice on Twitter. I was able to share several of the job links already, and I'll be able to get to Facebook as well. But some of the info is already right there. If you go to @UntilJustice, I think it's employment resources, what the sentence is or what have you, but should be more to come. Thanks to Nick over the road. Let's see. Any other folks, comments that they wanted to share? Anyone being impacted by the vaccine mandates and all of that madness before we wrap things up?
May I be heard?
Caller in Florida? Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much, sir. As far as the COVID-19 situation, the clerk, the top powerful white person, he had the supervisor, white woman, send out an email saying that he would still like for us to wear masks, but the county commission, the date, I guess, ended for them to enforce the customers, like the public, from coming in and being made or, you know, having a mandate for them to wear masks. So that's kind of been a tricky one right there. So I guess from the local news reports, they've been having it to where they still have to, I guess, make a decision on whether or not they're going to extend or redo the mask mandate, because they still have white people that are being defined, like you say, white defiance. And I see a lot of that here in the city. I wanted to mention that. And the white hookups, like the supervisor, for some reason, like, I don't know if I mentioned this on the program, like, she's coming there bragging. I consider it bragging. When we get on the elevator and she's like, I get to park in Mr. Such and Such, the clerk spot, the first four spots in the exclusive area, all white people. Now she a supervisor now. Now the black male is, in terms of, the the titles or whatever is on a title higher than her. And I've never seen him park in that area, but she's been able to park there for weeks at a time. Like, not only just if he isn't there, but if any of the other three spots are vacant. So I've seen where she's parked her vehicle there, but if she isn't there, if she isn't at work, she's using PTO, and if there's a vacant spot, for some reason, no other supervisor can seem to use the spot. And I had sent an email to you, Gus, with some pictures of some of the ladies that work on the other side, and they're wearing their witch costumes. They wanted to be witches, right? So everybody come in wearing a lot of black today, playing Thriller, right? Michael Jackson. And now the black male walked in and he said, "Oh, you're a witch today. I'm not surprised." So it's anti-blackness, right? So she responded like, "Oh yeah, today I'm a witch. I could have been the other one." Now, I don't know what exactly that meant. I don't know if she was trying to say, you know, something that rhymes with witch or whatever, because this is how they talk, right? So she was like, "Oh, happy anniversary," or whatever, to the guy. And one last one, the cowbell with the new white female employee, she made some interesting comments. Like, number one was, she says, like, the guy she's engaged to, a black male, she says that before, like, they take his children at the end of the weekend, right, she makes sure she fills them up with sugar before she or they drop them off to the mother. So I don't know exactly. So I don't know if that is a you know, a black female, a white woman. I'm not entirely sure. She said, "Yeah, every time I got to make sure I give them some candy or something sweet, some sugar or something like that." And then she made a comment to the victim saying, "Oh, with mixed children, you got to make sure you don't ever give them anything red, R-E-D, anything red." So that's just bad. And the victim responds and mentions the other white woman that has offspring with the black male. "Oh, yeah, I got to let her know then. I didn't know anything about that." So I have no idea where that racism came from. But I wanted to share those, and that's all I have to share. Thank you.
The hogwash is enormous in the state of Florida and in the system of white supremacy. That really is, to be more accurate about it. I didn't even see the emails until you mentioned them. Like, wow. I've said that for years. Like, this is the holiday that I think Christmas is the biggest in terms of white supremacy holidays, but Halloween is like the most aligned with the spirit, the essence of white supremacy, racism, culture. It's all of it in one. And any excuse to be tacky, and we can all dress up as witches. Why is that something that we want to promote? Like, with everything about witches and culture, it's not, you know, that they go out and help and do constructive things. And I was feeling bad, so I called the neighborhood witch and she came and hooked me up. They could say all that about, you know, "Hey, that's, you just don't know the culture," and blah, blah, blah. That's not what is generally promoted when they talk about witches. They generally talk about someone who is deceptive, has some sort of, you know, pot with a concoction that might poison me or turn me into a rabbit or, you know, who knows. Why is that? You know, we got to participate in that. And then I get scolded. "Where's your costume?" "Oh, I knew it'd be you." Dang.
I mean, that's like pressure. They got what they call peer pressure. Because I got to come in and do all this. And this isn't even social distancing. Like he mentioned, they let the mandate fall through, what have you. So now they can't really bully customers about coming in the courthouse and not wearing a mask and all that. Like, I would not be like in favor of that. That's nothing to celebrate either. Like, man, now we just have more in the state of Florida to just have even more confusion and health risks, unnecessary health risks even. They come with just foolishness on top of foolishness. I'm looking at some of the photographs. Like, it looks like they even have a black person who got the whole witch costume, and, you know, I'm going to jump in all this as well. VGQ, I was a victim myself. I don't think I was ever that confused where I dressed up for, like, in a work environment for Halloween, but VGQ, and they bully you, you know, they can pressure you if you don't do it, and do it with a smile, like, you might get in trouble. Wow, that is the, let me make sure I didn't miss any of the, but yeah, I mean, what is constructive about this? Like, this does not make me feel good. I show up and I've got, you know, I need to get my criminal record, and this is what the person looks like behind the desk. Like, oh, my day just got way better. This is going to be great. Like, that is the, anyone be careful if you're going to be out and about this weekend all the way through Sunday. It's going to be probably this sort of looniness all the way through. And drunken behavior on the road and all the rest of the antics. Just be as mindful as you possibly can if you're going to be out and about. Maybe even try and minimize being out too late. I'd say like after 10, try to minimize all that, because I'm sure it'll just be, you know, zaniness. People feel like they got to make up if they didn't get to do Halloween last year and all that. So be very mindful if you're going out and about over the weekend. Man. I think they will call it. Yes, all the bitch. Glad you survived all that. I reckon we got everybody. We didn't miss anybody. Nothing egregious, I think. Grant, we will be here tomorrow. We will do our compensatory call-in, wrap things up for the week, and I guess get ready for a new month as well, if we can survive the holiday again. Hopefully it'll be at least muted, since it's technically on Sunday, but I'm sure that just means lots of acting a fool today and tomorrow. So hunker down. All of that said, especially this weekend, sobriety would be best. I think there'll be enough drunkards and folks under the influence of all kinds of substances over the next few days or so. So kind of want to be very alert anyway. Don't contribute to the problem if you can. In addition to being alert, man, folks come in the workplace and they're bragging about their jujitsu skills and wanting to choke you out. And or if you're out in public and someone is being hostile and rowdy, exit. This is not a time to get into verbal confrontations with strangers. You have no idea if that person is armed, if they have an entire group with them and they're also armed. If you did not leave your residence prepared to kill and or die, exit. Very unsafe times on the plantation for a myriad of reasons. If you're going to be driving, you are sober, buckled, and not on the phone. We need all of our attention so we can be mindful about what's happening around us and minimize as much as we can potential contact with race soldiers, badge or no. That said, Creator, help us remain patient with other victims of white supremacy. Help us to remain patient with ourselves. Remind us to demonstrate the highest levels of Black self-respect at all times, in all places, each and every time we are in contact with another Black person. It has been time. Replace white supremacy with justice. Immediately. Cow signing out. Thanks all for tuning in.
Nigga, you so brainwashed.
I'm a victim, brother.
Problem. You're a victim. I'm a victim of 400 years of conditioning.
Shut up.
The man has programmed my conditioning. Mm-hmm. Even my conditioning has been conditioned.